Welcome to another episode of the Gamer Horizon podcast. This is episode 21. I am Alex.
And I'm Anthony.
So, what's up, dude? So, finally, E3 is done. I know last time we said, oh, it was done, but, you know, we were technically, like, recording while E3 was still going on. So, how does it feel not to be bombarded with gameplay, trailers, and articles, and just crazy news for once?
It's very nice, because we could talk about what we want again, game-wise, of course.
I know, right? So, obviously, like, it's been, like, what, like, a week already or so? Anything new with you?
Well, my wife and I have been talking about downgrading our cable, because it was found out that my son and I mostly watch Netflix.
Uh-huh.
Although, with a few exceptions of HBO shows like True Blood, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And my, you know, I have, you know, other legal ways of watching those shows.
Uh-huh.
Particularly HBO Go.
Uh-huh.
But what I'm saying is there's just not enough incentive. And the reason she wants to keep the cable is she's a culinary student.
I see.
And she wants to keep Food Network, unfortunately.
Food Network's a great, you know, channel and stuff.
I don't know about...
I don't know. Like, there's actually a lot of really cool shows on there. Like, Restaurant Impossible. Have you ever seen that show?
Yeah. You know what it is, though? It's not that they're bad shows. It's that I get tired of them. Because...
Yeah.
That's the only thing she really watches, and I'll tell you this, Food Network is not a channel designed for someone to watch over and over, because they play lots of fucking reruns. Like, they'll play an episode of Restaurant Impossible or Chopped or something,
uh-huh.
And those are good shows.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't get me wrong. The problem with that is they will re-air that episode about 20 times between the next new episode.
Yeah, I actually like Iron Chef America also. I thought that's actually a really fun show to watch.
What about the Japanese one?
The Japanese one's good too, but I think it's like on like another channel now and stuff, like sometimes.
Cooking channel.
Yeah, the cooking channel, yeah. I as you know, like I actually canceled my cable TV, so I don't get these things anymore, but I do have fond memories of watching Chopped, Restaurant Impossible, and, you know, like the next Food Network star and stuff, you know, like that's actually, and, you know, I'm a big fan of Alton Brown. I think, like, he's actually a really great kind of lecturer, kind of, you know, TV personality and stuff.
And a nerd.
And a nerd. So, you know, it's very entertaining, like, watching him actually, like, do his show and stuff. And, you know, like, it's thanks to my mom who actually, like, kept on watching him and stuff. And I'm like, huh. And actually, like, my, the way that I actually make steak, like, pan-fried steak and stuff, I actually derived it from his show.
My wife thinks he's the one of the better ones on there, like, he's, the ones that knows.
Yeah.
Which is obvious. And she watches that Food Network star, and they've changed the format.
Yeah,
of it completely. Yeah, I guess they got inspired by what's that new show? Fucking that new Simon Cowell show.
I don't have TV, so
okay. he came up. I don't. I'm a noob. I don't follow mainstream things.
Uh huh.
So or shows at least.
That would qualify you as a dork.
Okay, I'm a dork. He came up with another singing competition, and what they do is they divide them into teams. Like, the coaches will each, okay, the judges, yeah, will, yeah, each take a team. That's what they're doing in Food Network.
I see.
Is Giada, Bobby Flay, and Alton Brown all have their own teams.
I see. Okay. Because it's always, like, kind of interesting, because these guys are on, like, multiple TV shows on the Food Network. And it makes you wonder, like, okay, are they okay if they go on a different channel? Because I think, like, when I was working out and stuff, like, and I'm still working out, at lunchtime, they actually have Michael Simon's, like, show on the air while you're, like, working out. And
The Chew?
Yeah, well, I don't know what the fuck the title is, but yeah. If you think about it and stuff, like, you're in the gym and you're watching, like, a cooking show with them, like, making desserts and, like, really just really, you know, delectable stuff, and you're like, all you want to do after, like, working out is just totally, like, scarf down, like, a burger or something really ridiculous because you've been working out, and it's almost like punishment. But I have something that will bring us back to video games. You ready for this?
Yes, I am.
Are you ready for this?
Yes, sir.
All right. People probably don't know this, but Iron Chef America, you know, the chairman's nephew or whatever the hell he is?
Yes.
That's Mark Dacascos.
Yes.
He starred in the Double Dragon movie.
You know what else he's in?
What?
Wing Commander 4.
Yep.
Yay, he's in Wing Commander 4.
And he was also like the second crow, which kind of sucked. Yay.
Yay, the second crow.
So, all right.
Kind of sucked.
Yeah, well, yeah, it really sucked. City of Angels, was it? Crow City of Angels?
Real quick, though, I was just going to say, you know, I was just going to say, as back to Netflix real quick.
Okay.
I think putting him on a video game console.
Okay.
Is one of the best things you can do. As much as we complained last week about Microsoft focusing, we're not totally against that.
Yeah, well, the only reason why I'm kind of iffy about that, because I have other dedicated appliances that actually can serve me Netflix. Like, you know, before we actually started the podcast today, I was actually on my Apple TV and stuff, and I was just starting, you know, to watch, like, the Transformers Prime series, which I've never seen before. So I was, like, really stoked when I saw it, because I was like, ooh, look, you know. Because I'm actually going to Universal Studios this Saturday with my best friends and stuff, and we're actually going to check out the Transformers ride. So I'm like, you know, so all day at work and stuff, I was like, you know, trying to find like videos of Peter Cullen talking as Optimus Prime and stuff, and I found this really hilarious video of him guest starring, quote unquote, as Optimus Prime, as like a guest on the David Letterman show, like back in 2009, where he was actually reading like these funny phrases that, of course, Optimus Prime wouldn't say normally. Like, what was it? Like, he said something along the lines of, live from New York, it's Saturday night. And I was like, oh, shit, that's fucking great. Okay. And my friend and I had, like, a conversation about what if, you know, Optimus Prime walked into a bar, started hitting on a chick, you know? Like, how would that, you know, how would that, like, kind of pan out, you know? Like, hi, I am Optimus Prime.
I'm a Generation 1 guy myself, I guess.
I haven't seen Prime, so that's why
I haven't seen Prime either, though, you know, so.
So that's why I'm kind of open to this. So far, like, I've only seen a few minutes of it. It's kind of CG-based, but it's pretty good. I'm going to give it a try. Maybe next week I'll give you, like, a 411 on it and stuff.
Real quick about Transformers, they did just add all three seasons of Beast Wars, which I've heard is really a good Transformers series, from what I understand.
That's also CG, right?
That was CG in the 90s.
Okay.
In the 90s. So, yeah, don't expect anything on the line of Prime. But
no, I know what you're talking about. No,
I'm warning everybody else, though. Not you, because I know you know that.
Yeah. But, I like that the Generation 1 stuff is there, too. So that's really cool.
It's kind of funny that I watch, you know, the Final Fantasy 13 CG. Yeah. And it blows all those shows away, which is crazy. Their in-game graphics blows all those away.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I actually watched a little bit of Final Fantasy Spirits Within last week.
Yes, it's not a bad movie. I think it's underrated.
It really isn't. And, you know, like, I was watching it, and I think the thing that annoyed me the most is the pacing of the dialogue and some of the terminology, like spirits. The thing is, there's such a strong attachment to the word spirits that it means already a particular way that it's very difficult to detach yourself from that meaning when you're watching the movie. And I think that that's really like one of the things that's made people get confused when they were watching the whole thing, is because they use these kind of terminologies that meant already, like, strongly something else in real life. But the only other complaint that I had is just there was some dialogue that they were trying to fit within whatever is already animated, and they didn't want to re-render it, and that didn't make some of the, you know, conversations natural. Like, between, like, Alec Baldwin and Ming-Na Wen, like, there were just sequences where it seems like they're both racing to just make it so that the animations would fit what they were saying, and I was like, aw.
I forgot it had some... Donald Sutherland was in it. Oh, Steve Buscemi.
Ving Rhames, you know, James Woods, it was a huge cast. That's exactly why Squaresoft like went under, because this
and
was a
flop. Merged with Square Enix.
Yep.
And Sakaguchi was, a lot of people don't know this, the reason he formed Mistwalker was they blamed him.
Uh-huh.
Anytime a company gets into financial trouble, there has to be a fall guy. Sakaguchi, sadly, was the fall guy in that case.
I think it's more so with the Japanese industries and stuff, mm-hmm. because, you know, just the way that they are. You know, it's kind of like, you know, leaving the company is kind of like seppuku. Because that's, you know, that happened to Sony too. Like with Ken Kutaragi, like he got laid off, but you know what it is. It's basically he was the fall guy for the price range of the PlayStation 3 and stuff. And you can bet your ass that, you know, the PlayStation 4 is not going to be that price range.
Giant enemy crabs.
I know.
All right. Yeah. We're back in video game realm, thankfully.
Oh,
so.
Thank goodness. We went from, like, Food Network to Transformers and back to video games. Wow. That was that's entertainment right there. Give ourselves a round of applause. Yeah.
Final Fantasy.
So, okay. So, I want to start with what I've been playing because it's not a lot. Because I know you've been so excited about what you're going to be talking about. I'm not even going to, like, hint at it. I'm just going to give it to you later. But I've been playing a very interesting game by Kairosoft. Now, have you played any Kairosoft games?
They the makers of Tiny Tower?
No, they are the makers of Game Dev Story.
Okay, what's that?
Oh, geez. Game Dev Story, and this is not the one I've been playing. I played this like months ago.
Is it a Japanese company or is it a Western company?
Yes, it's a Japanese company. Basically, they specialize in simulations. And I know you're not a big simulation guy, but what's interesting is that they have a hand in a lot of different kinds of simulations. They have one that, where you are a owner of your own hot springs, I think. You're the owner of your own Formula One racing team. You're the owner of a school. You're a person who runs a game development studio. And now they have their magnum opus, which is, I feel, is like really, really interesting. And I was hoping somebody would make a game out of this. And the game is called Dungeon Village. Have you heard
Dungeon
of this
Village.
Game?
No. Is it iOS?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And yeah, I haven't talked about a lot of iOS games. It's because I've been really a lot more selective on games that I play. Now, when Kairosoft, you know, during E3, James Milkey from, you know, formerly of EGM and stuff like that, we got into talking and he was talking about how, you know, how...
Hold on, you know him?
Well, yeah, I'm following his Twitter. I mean, that's the most that I know him.
Oh, I thought you like talked to him in because I remember him from I loved EGM back in like the early 2000s, but continue.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, you know, I follow him and he's in Japan still. He didn't go to E3, and then he basically said, like, you guys can enjoy E3, I'm gonna enjoy myself, you know, like some Dungeon Village by Kairosoft. And I'm like, and he's in Japan right now, so I'm like, wait, is that here in the US? And he's like, yep, enjoy, man. And I'm like, holy shit. So I went to like the app store and stuff and purchased it right away. And what it is, dude, is you basically are the owner of your own town set in a medieval RPG realm.
Oh shit.
So basically you have your inns, you have your weapon stores, you have your armor stores and schools to improve your combat and all that stuff. And you have people going into your town, leveling up by defeating monsters outside your town, exploring dungeons. And the only thing you got to do is pretty much maintain your city.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah. So basically everybody, you know, each, you know, kind of character or fighter has like different jobs and stuff, just like in, you know, other Kairosoft games. And, you know, basically you can master all those and stuff so that you can have, like, maybe, like, the perfect class and stuff. It's really interesting. It has that the class elements of something like Final Fantasy, but to a lesser degree. The level cap is, like, a 10. And then, of course, each of those have different kinds of attributes. Like, let's say, for example, the adventurer actually pays more taxes, you know, in their houses and stuff. And then you build housing for them so they don't have to leave your town. So they have a place to live. They can buy, you know, confections, like, you know, desserts and stuff, you know, ice items, potions. You can even give them gifts and new armor so that, you know, so that they won't just die right away. And of course, the, you know, the enemies like scale in difficulty, you know, the more years have passed. So it's definitely an interesting game. I had an idea for a game once to basically make it kind of like a business simulation and kind of have to deal with helping, you know, fighters, like RPG characters and stuff, and, you know, defeating dungeons and monsters that are plaguing the town. And this pretty much is it. This is the game that I've been wanting somebody to make, and it's pretty fucking fantastic.
You know what they need to do with those type of games?
What?
and I always forget this character's name, but they need to take that shop, Toneko or whatever from Dragon Quest,
uh-huh,
and make a game like that with him.
That would be interesting.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is it Toneko or what's his name?
I think it's Toneko, yeah.
Yeah, they need to make a game.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a main character in Dragon Quest IV, but still. Right. Still, yeah. They need to make a game about him running a shop like that.
Yeah, but this is kind of like what's interesting about, you know, the Japanese development market is that Kairosoft is just... They've existed in the 90s and stuff. It's just now that because... the iOS platform is allowing them to do so, they're getting world renowned, which is really great and fantastic. So I definitely recommend like Dungeon Village. I haven't finished it yet. I've played this game for hours though, like literally like when I was sick last week and stuff, and people probably didn't notice it, but I was sick last week during E3. I did play, you know, Dungeon Village like the whole time, like that I was actually like, you know, sick and stuff like that, and I really, really enjoyed it. And you know, I think you will too, Anthony.
I'll take a look at it.
Yeah. So
Dungeon Village.
But you know, other than that, like I played a little bit of like the, you know, the PlayStation Plus freebies, you know? And
some of those were good.
Yeah, I think those were pretty good. I restarted my file on Little Big Planet 2, and I really, really enjoy it. And it's kind of funny. It's easy to forget how certain games like have given you certain emotions and stuff. And I really felt strongly that Little Big Planet 2 was a huge step up from like, you know, Little Big Planet 1. And they really did a fantastic job of making that game, you know, really stand out from its, you know, from its predecessor.
And that game got forgotten about.
Yeah.
Won the Game of the Year awards. It's I love Little Big Planet 2. Now, mind you, I had to sell mine last year because of cash.
Yeah.
But I got the free digital and I still have my save.
Yeah.
I even got... I can talk about this because this will save me from talking about what I've been playing.
Uh-huh.
Because I have various ways with people, alone, whatever.
Uh-huh.
I bought some DLC.
For Little Big Planet 2?
Yep.
What'd you get?
The Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, jeez. That's crazy.
Yep. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Okay. The Final Fantasy VII costume pack comes... You could buy them all separately, but if you buy them all separately, you are not able to get the fifth character.
Which is?
If you buy them as a pack, you get it. The fifth character that you can only get with the bundle is Vincent.
Oh. Huh.
The four characters that you get are, and they're pretty predictable, are Cloud...
Uh-huh.
Tifa, Aerith, Vincent, and I guess, and I guarantee you know who the fifth one is.
Sephiroth?
Yeah.
Figures.
Yeah, it has. People would bitch if Sephiroth was not in that pack.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, they should make a second one with, like, the Barretts and Red 13s and shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a cool little pack. I just bought it because, you know, it's Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, that's cool.
And you get Cloud Sword. And you could smack people with it.
Yeah. That's cool. I have to really kind of get back into the DLC stuff just to kind of see what I'm interested in. I still have the DLC stuff from, like, the first Little Big Planet, which is great. You know, with, like, the Paintinator and all that stuff. They did a really good job with that series. And I actually can't wait to see how the Vita version fares. Although, I have friends who are in the beta right now, and they were basically telling me outright that it looks like Little Big Planet 2 on the PS3.
Well, I can tell you this. I don't know about Little Big Planet, but I can tell you the Vita is a powerful fucker when we get to my games.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because you know what game I'm referring to. But anyway...
So let's go there right now, because I don't have... I mean, that's really all that I've been playing, you know?
Real quick, I want to hear something that you said on Twitter.
Okay.
Real quick, I have to ask you this, because people have been asking me this, because we didn't talk about this during our games. I have to ask you this, because it's been bugging me. What happened with Dragon's Dogma with you?
Oh, yeah, I've been hyping about that.
Yeah, we need to talk about this real quick. Just briefly, what happened with Dragon's Dogma?
What happened is that I realized that it's very confusing to me what the focus is of Dragon's Dogma, because I've been doing so many main quests on that thing, and I haven't gotten like significant advances in the story since I started the game. which is, you know, something that I really like in RPGs, and somehow I am just not getting in Dragon's Dogma, which has sorely disappointed me, because I thought that there was going to be this really rich story woven in this, you know, great world. And then, you know, the more that I play it, the small, you know, kind of intricacies and idiosyncrasies the game has, it made me realize, and this is going to sound really strange, that I actually like the world of Skyrim more than Dragon's Dogma.
Uh-oh. Oh, shit. You went there, son.
I did. I did. And that's very surprising to me. And I'm pretty sure a whole, you know, a whole bunch of, like, gamers, like, jaws just dropped onto their desk when I heard, when they heard me, like, say that. Because it is true. Sadly. Like, the combat is probably the best thing in Dragon's Dogma.
That world has no lore. As much as I haven't played as much as you
lore.
Have. But yeah, that world has absolutely... I played about 10, 15 hours, and it has not any lore. And to be honest, a lot of JRPGs have more lore than that game
does. I know!
And they don't have much lore to begin with.
That's what I'm talking about. It's like... And that's... I guess I'm not saying that this game doesn't have focus, because obviously the focus was all on combat. And I guess what they meant to do was the story was a means to an end. But the more I explored of the world, the more that I felt that it was empty. Like, not empty as in, like, you know, lifeless and all that stuff, but just there's no context to it. Like, it's just like, well, you know, it's kind of like a whole bunch of people sitting around a desk and kind of like saying, okay, well, you know, like, this is like a medieval RPG, so we should have castles, we should have forts, we should have towns, we should have shopkeepers. And it's kind of like very cookie cutter in that sense. And then, of course, let's have like the monsters and stuff. Where did the monsters come from? I don't know. It's just there. You know, it's like... Come on, like, it's, there's so much, it's like they tried to parrot what Skyrim is, but kind of failed to understand why Skyrim is such a compelling experience, which is the world is living because there's so much context and so much life in everything around them, the books, the text, the, you know, just the lifestyle of everybody, and just the, you know, like, and it's funny because I don't read any of the books in Skyrim.
I do.
Not a lot of them, at least. But it's like I was missing them when I was playing Dragon's Dogma. No matter how weird that is, you know?
Here's the thing. Even, you know, Western RPGs in particular are known for complex lore.
Uh-huh.
And... That either goes whenever they create a new world,
uh-huh,
or when they use a license, and they make sure either way they use extensive amounts of lore.
Right.
In JRPGs, what they usually do is again, like we've talked about, they focus more on story characters. I'm going to get here when we talk about Tales later.
Uh-huh.
But at least in JRPGs, they have some sort of big backstory to that world. Not where there's all these little stories going on like Skyrim does, but right. It's some backstory, but that backstory is related to the plot. So at least you know something about that world.
Right.
Like Final Fantasy VI, the War of the Magi, or the Cataclysm, or Sin from Final Fantasy X, you know, mm-hmm, or the whole thing in Chrono Trigger with Lavos, all may not have the strongest lore, Alex.
But it's interwoven into the main story.
Yeah, and Dragon's Dogma, there's nothing like that, yeah. I didn't feel.
Yeah, even with the 15 hours you played of the game, you didn't even feel it.
Yeah.
It's kind of and like, when will that happen? And that's the thing, is like, that's where it came to a point where I was playing it and I said, you know what, I'm not going to get to that point, because they totally missed an opportunity to really make this a rich world where you can really kind of enjoy both the storyline, the environment, and fantastic combat. And it sucks that it's come to that, and I don't see myself ever picking up the controller ever.
Oh,
for this
shit.
Game, yeah.
Well, there you go.
However, it shows promise. The thing is, they have to address those things in a possible sequel. Because I know that this is actually a very expensive game that Capcom made. They just need to take care of other ways to engage the player. Because the combat is great, but it's like, you know, after your fifth, like, Griffin or something like that, it's like, it's gonna get old soon, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not like the world has variety. Like, all the enemies and, like, NPCs spawn in the exact same place as they are when you, you know, meet up with them, like, either in the overworld or in town, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, again, yeah, it's weird. It made me realize how good Skyrim is. It's kind of funny. And mind you, I did not have this complaint when I was playing Kingdoms of Amalur. It's just a difference of, you know, of just how the Western developers and the Japanese developers understand what open world games mean, you know? And yeah, it actually, if anything, it made me want to finish Amalur, because I haven't finished that game yet.
Yep.
And it's sad that I haven't finished it, because the company's gone, you know?
Well, we'll see what happens with Amalur if you get back into it.
Definitely. Like, I think I'm going to try popping it in and just to kind of check it out again and see, like, you know, how it is, how if it's stood up against all the games I've been playing. So
I have, to be fair, though, about open-world Japanese role-playing games, I have heard, and I know you haven't gotten back into it, and I don't know if you will, I have heard that Xenoblade gets heavy onto lore and story later on.
Yeah, I'm pretty far in the game, and yeah, they have pockets of it, but it's not... It's weird because it's not as deep as other JRPGs, you know? Like, it's actually, like, for a game, you know, who's been made by the guy who made Xenogears and Xenosaga, there's not a lot of depth to the lore to this, you know? It's pretty straightforward, you know? So, I don't know. But, like, we'll see.
I heard it's like, the last third, they one of my friends told me they cram a lot of story, but they don't rush it somehow. And it makes up for that lack somehow. Like, I don't know. That's what I've heard. I need to play it. I don't know. I'm not defending it.
Yeah.
Because from what I've seen, I'm on your stance, so who knows?
Yeah.
That's hearsay.
Yeah. And yeah, I did realize that, you know, I had this recommendation and stuff for Dragon's Dogma. But the thing is, like, you have to take into the context of, oh, it's Alex being excited about a game again. And then we'll see, like, how he feels about a week or two. Because I am pretty critical, as everybody knows and stuff. And I think that when I get really excited about a game, you might want to wait, like, a week or two later to see, like, how my reaction is.
I know to do that.
Yeah. But I know for a fact that Amalur is, like, something that I really miss visiting and stuff. And I do want to visit it again. And really just kind of put the nail in the coffin. No pun intended.
Oh, damn, that sounds awful. Oh, shit.
So, all right. Anyways, it's your turn, sir. What you been playing?
Okay, so I have a review coming up, so I'm going to run down through these real quick.
Okay.
Because there's four titles that I'm going to be talking about, so I'm going to run down through them. First and foremost, I want to talk about this. I talk about this game a lot, but I'm talking about it again because this game, along with The Walking Dead, since April, are my most anticipated for DLC or the next episode, I guess.
Okay.
This game, of course, is Pinball Arcade, and we finally got the Vita.
You finally got the Vita?
DLC.
Oh, okay.
The Vita DLC. I'm going to be honest with this, too. I actually like the Vita version over the PS3 version for one sheer reason. The response times for the flippers, Alex, seem spot on in Vita, and there seems to be a delay in the PS3 version.
That might be a hardware thing where your TV has, like, some sort of delay and stuff like that.
I don't get delays on Marvel Pinball, though.
Huh.
Or the Zen Pinball games.
Interesting.
But on that one, yes, I do get a delay. Whoa. And the Vita, I don't. It's pretty instantaneous.
Well,
who knows?
That's why I got mine on the iPad.
Well, I got two versions of the game, which is nice. So
yeah,
for the price of one, the Vita version's nice. I got the DLC. We got finally what you've had on iPod, Bride of Pinbot and Medieval Madness.
Yep.
And I will say both of those are excellent pinball machines.
Hmm. Okay.
I like them both.
Cool.
My favorite ones though have been, you know, Theater of Magic and Arabian Nights, which I posted on Twitter. I scored 64 million on the other day.
Nice.
Nice. So But one thing I will talk about too, I want to tell people I'm going to participate in this Kickstarter is, and it'll be over by the time you hear this, so there's really no point. They did one for the Twilight Zone, I think, talking about this not too long ago.
Yeah, we talked about this.
Well, something happened. They reached the goal for Twilight Zone. And they even had the picture of the guy signing the contract with CBS.
Uh-huh.
To make the machine. But what they did, and this is just me being a fanboy because I actually like this franchise a lot, as you know.
Uh-huh.
This is one of my favorite TV shows of all time, is not only if they can double the amount of the, because it's the same price as Twilight Zone, if they can double the amount of the Kickstarter to $110,000, not only will we get Twilight Zone, we'll get Star Trek The Next Generation, the pinball machine.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm a fan of Star Trek The Next Generation, I want it. Nice. So, and what's funny about pinball is a lot of the best pinball machines, unlike video games, kind of has this opposite thing. And it's understandable because it's pinball, is a lot of the best pinball machines ever created are licensed one. Twilight Zone, Star Trek The Next Generation, and the Addams Family are all considered amongst the best pinball game machines of all time.
Yeah.
Compared to like the Addams Family games, which are considered the worst games of all time.
Yeah.
LGN, Alex.
Yeah, I remember trying to finish like Addams Family on like the NES. Ugh. Fester's Quest was really good though.
Uh-oh.
What?
You liked Fester's Quest?
Yeah.
I didn't like that game very much.
Well, you know, it's for the time it was like pretty good. It was a Sunsoft game, so it was one of those like fucking difficult games and stuff at the time.
Love Sunsoft.
Yep.
So just wanted to talk about that. And I think that's the power of Kickstarter, is that it allows things like this to happen. And I think that's a pretty good Kickstarter. Wouldn't you agree? Yeah. It's different from other ones.
Yeah. Although I have to say I'm actually refraining from going to Kickstarter because I literally have three games right now that are in development and I don't have them yet.
Okay. Well, how do you feel about... Well, this is a little different because this is for a game that we know is good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more for, like, licensing thing. How do you feel about that compared?
I don't feel strongly for getting these. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, like, if they come, they come. But I'm not gonna, you know, put money on it because I had no kind of emotional attachment to these games. So, you know, I'm hoping for the best.
I like Twilight Zone, and yes, it's on Netflix, so watch if you've never seen it. So is Star Trek. So
Jesus.
So watch them both. But yeah, that's it. So let's move on to another Vita game. I'm going to have to refrain myself because for these next two games, because I have to talk about Tails.
Uh-huh.
Gravity Rush.
Yep. Came out.
Came out. I have to say it's the best game that I played on the Vita.
That's not too difficult.
No, that's not too difficult. But I will say this, though. I can see this game being on a console. I can see... this game is just... Everything about it is fantastic so far.
Mm-hmm.
The concept, the exploration. It's a good open world. There's a lot of character relationships kind of going on. There's a lot of NPCs that you know. And it continues... It doesn't, like, forget things. It keeps things going. Like, for example, story-wise... At the very beginning of the game, there's this dad, right?
Uh-huh.
And his kid is being sucked into this vortex, and there's a creature attacking him and trying to take him in. And what happens is you rescue the kid,
mm-hmm.
and the house is going in, and the main character, Kat, she tries to pull in the house but fails. So what happens is they chastise her, even though she saved the child's life, for not saving the house.
Mm.
And what's cool, what's funny is, oh, you know, you're like, oh, these characters are just plot devices to, you know, make you feel bad for her. You run into them several times.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually kind of have this relationship with them that is very antagonistical and stuff.
Interesting.
And then there's a cop that you run into, and there's several other people. So it's pretty cool. It's an open world game. I like it a lot.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is.
I thought it was level based.
No, it's open world, dude.
Okay.
It's an open world game. It has all the motifs of an open world game, hidden stuff, you know, except you can form reality. There's side missions.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the side missions are like these time trial things where you can get more gems.
Mm-hmm.
And gems serves two purposes. Gems are to power up your attacks. and gems are to power up equipment to get more of these side quests.
Okay.
And there's all kinds of stuff, and it seems like the game's expanding more and more what you can do as you keep proceeding.
Okay.
And what's cool is I like the mission variety. There's one mission that I did in the main story that involves using gravity for stealth.
Huh.
Where you have to sneak around these guards, but you have to use the gravity, and you have to figure out, you know, what direction is best by flipping reality over. So
I see.
I will talk more about this game next week, though.
Okay.
I know you're going to be playing it soon, right?
End of the week.
End of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Great game.
Okay.
Before you
move on, the demo, not representative of the game.
No, it's not. No. The demo is a tutorial. It's a very poor demo because it doesn't let you get a feel of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little wary because it didn't justify the game, but when you actually play the game and you get to you get to do all that stuff that the demo doesn't let you do,
mm-hmm.
It's a lot fun, more fun.
Okay.
So, there you go, Gravity Rush.
All right, let's move on.
Okay, last game before we talk about Tails, Lollipop Chainsaw.
Mm-hmm.
I have lots of things to say about this game. But I won't this week. Next week we'll talk about it. I probably will have a review for this next week as well, so I'll have two reviews in 2 weeks.
Nice.
Maybe three, depending on... I think Gravity Rush is a lot longer, though.
Okay.
So...
Wait, I think that wouldn't be too difficult to think about, to actually realize. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty big game in scope. It's bigger than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
On to Lollipop, though. The thing about Lollipop Chainsaw is... I could tell you it's not very long. I'm pretty much more than halfway done with the game.
And you've only had it for like what, a day?
Yeah. But there's a lot of replay value, there's a lot of collectibles. It's not everyone, you know, it's being marketed as a kind of a traditional zombie game. It is nothing traditional zombie. I don't even know if I can consider this a zombie game.
You know, when I was seeing like stuff about this game, like I actually would classify this under, like, you know, more action adventure, like 3D action adventure, kind of like Devil May Cry more so.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, too, the way the zombies act. They actually call you, they insult you. They call you bitch and stuff.
Huh.
We're gonna get you, bitch. You know, and the zombies do weird shit. Like, they're very intelligent. Like, there'll be zombies on fire, and then there'll be these suicide bomber zombies. And the fire ones will run, like, yay, and they'll run towards the suicide bomber ones.
Uh-huh.
And then there's zombies that attack you with I don't even know. And it's not even that. It's, you know, the story is ridiculous. It's a Suda51. The script is not traditional. Mm-hmm. And I know he didn't develop it, but, you know, Grasshopper has their style.
Uh-huh.
Every studio has their style of developing it. And the game design and the story overall feels traditional. If you play Shadows of the Damned or No More Heroes, it feels very much like it.
Okay.
In terms of its structure and the way it's designed. But the script, which was, I believe, written by James Gunn, is not Suda51 or Grasshopper. It's an interesting script because it's a very well-written script. And it's just so full of pop culture reference, more so than any game that I've ever seen.
Interesting.
And what I mean by that is not necessarily like Saints Row or GTA. Yes, they have pop culture references, but they're mostly parodies of pop culture.
Huh.
They make direct references to Facebook. They make direct references about movies. There's tons of licensed music. I mean, you know, there's Lollipop, that song. You know, You Spin Me Right Round. That song, that 80s song, plays when you're in this sequence
mm-hmm.
where you're in a big tractor and you just mow down zombies.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's a Japanese game, but Americanized, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's Japanese design and Americanized. And on the final note, I will say Grasshopper Studios is the master of action game boss battles. Because, like you told me earlier, boss battles, and I don't know if you... Well, you obviously agree with this, is a lost art.
Mm-hmm.
And why do you feel that to a degree?
Well, it's only like a few companies that actually have done really good boss battles and stuff. Like, I feel like Bayonetta has some really amazing boss battles. Some Western developed games, like, you know... you know, Mercury Steam has done some pretty...
Lords of Shadow.
Yeah, Lords of Shadow is pretty interesting, boss battle-wise. And same thing with, like, the God of War series. You know, obviously, like, it depends on the game that has them. Like, you're not going to expect, like, a boss battle, like, you know, Call of Duty or something like that, like, in every single level or something. But it's, like, you know, it's something that is not, is just not present in a lot of the games nowadays, right. You know.
And in some games, too, like Gears of War, for example, Epic was very spotty on their boss battles.
Yeah.
I will say the third game, I know you never beat it. The third one had a boss battle that was very good, and it's as good as the last battle of the original Gears of War.
Okay.
It's not like the shitty second one where I didn't even realize I beat the final boss. That's how bad
it was. It was like a rail shooter.
I don't even know what it was. Like, I remember me and my brother were playing it, and it literally, like, 2 seconds we were flying, and then, like, two blasts happened, and then the game froze, and, like, fuck it, and I was going to shut it off, and then all of a sudden all my achievements popped up, like, six different, and I'm like, we beat the game, that's it?
Yeah.
Bad. So that, we'll talk about more about Gravity Rush and Lollipop Chainsaw especially next week.
Definitely, and by that time I would have had my copies and I would have, you know, spent some time on it and actually gotten the games and stuff.
Yeah.
So
now let's talk about Tales of Graces.
Yes. Finally.
Okay, so my stance is I did not beat the final, before we go into this review, I did not beat the final battle of the, I did not beat Lineage and Legacies.
Uh-huh.
And I might have some after commentary on that alone later on, but I will say that I did give you some concerns about it, remember?
Uh-huh.
And I will say that they were unfounded because Lineage and Legacies actually has some legitimate questions that they answer questions that the main story did not.
Okay, so let's start this over. Let's assume that we don't know anything about Tales of Graces and just start from the very beginning.
Well, that was a disclaimer, so I was going to start from the...
Okay.
Okay, so Tales of Graces was originally released on the Wii in Japan in 2009. When it was released, it was a heavily buggy game, so it had to be, you know, because it's a Wii game, it had to be, how can you say it?
Patched.
Patched. No, not patched. It had to be recalled.
Oh, really? That bad?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like Star Ocean for the PS2 when that happened.
Okay.
So they patched it and all that, and then Tales games have a tendency of coming out on one console sometimes, and then they'll release an even better version.
Uh huh.
And that's what happened with Tales of Graces. And usually in the US we get the regular version, not the enhanced version.
Uh huh.
You know, like we got 360 version of Vesperia, not the PS3. They did that with Tales of Graces. They called Tales of Graces F and added tons of content and added for PS3.
Okay.
Well, fortunately, here, we got the PS3 version.
Yay!
Yay! So we finally got the enhanced version.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know a lot of people may have beaten this before me, if not, and you're still curious about Tales. If you're new to Tales, this is, you know, any Tales is great to start. This is probably the easiest one to find, or the 3DS Abyss, go with this one. If you're not new and you haven't played this game, I will say this, though. This Tales game is very different than a lot of than any of the other Tales games I've ever played in many ways, story-wise and mechanically.
Okay.
Okay. Now the story, let's talk about the beginning of the story. The story starts out about these kids, and the main character is Asbel Lant, and it's about him, his brother Hubert Lant, Sharia Barnes, who is their friend. She's the sickly girl, very sick little girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they all hang together. And one day, Asbel is known for being very mischievous, and he's a troublemaker.
Mm-hmm.
And against his father's wishes, because in the world, there's all these political things going on, and his father's the lord of the town called Lant. And Lant is on, you know, I believe it's Fendel. They're on touchy terms with a country called Fendel.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't want him wandering off. Well, he goes to this flower hill with his brother all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when they go there, they find this mysterious girl, and her name's Sophie, and she has no human emotions.
Mm-hmm.
She's very emotionless, and she understands nothing about the world.
Mm.
So when they return back to town, they find out that the royal prince of a baron or barony, I always forget the name, he's coming to town and he's staying there. And at first, he's standoffish of Asbel and his friends, but he befriends him. So it becomes a group of five kids, and they all start bonding and shit. Then, I'm not going to say anything, a tragedy happens.
Mm-hmm.
This tragic event happens, and all the kids get separated to the wind. And Asbel leaves Sharia, his friend, begs him not to leave. He goes anyway to the Knights Academy. They split up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the game skips 7 years later. And they're adults, and basically, I'm not going to summarize all that because that's when things get really interesting.
Uh-huh.
And basically, they're joined by two new friends, Pascal, this kind of wacky scientist girl, and Asbel's mentor, this sort of womanizing, kind of a very secretive man named Malik.
Okay.
Who's Asbel's mentor. And they, you know, they embark on this journey and they find out the truth of, you know, of Sophie, and something happens with Richard and all kinds of stuff. And I have to say, I really enjoyed the story in this game, mm-hmm. obviously, because I got excited telling about it.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't like the childhood section. I think it's good because it actually makes you bond with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Story-wise, I will say, again, this is also very different from Tales, because one, it goes into science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
The main story delves completely into science fiction, practically. There's still magic, and it's still a fantasy world, but there's still, but the subject of the main story is based on science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's spaceships, there's robots, there's aliens.
Right.
You know, there's scientific work going on. It's pure science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's different from other Tales.
I see.
Now, another, and some of the common elements are missing. Like, every Tales games that I play have always revolved around, you know, them trying to get the four spirits. I made a mistake and said that the four spirits were in there. They are, but they're not a main part of the story. They're actually just summon attacks for Pascal, and that's it. But they serve no purpose for the story.
Okay.
So that's the story. I will say the ending of the main storyline is very satisfactory, and if they would have ended it that way without Lineage and Legacies, I would have been okay.
Hmm.
I really like the ending. Then there's the epilogue, Lineage and Legacies, and I will not say any details on that, but I will say that I had some reservations.
Yeah, because I think you told me like that you were okay with the ending, and you were hesitant in playing the epilogues because you were kind of comparing it with Persona 3 Fez, where it's kind of, you know, it might actually ruin the ending and stuff like that in some ways.
Yeah, and you know what? Well, luckily, it doesn't. It doesn't, because what it makes you realize is there's some unanswered questions that the main story didn't answer, and it starts answering those questions.
Okay.
And, you know, there's some subplots, like more romantic subplots that were unresolved too, which are kind of nice to see filled out. Mm-hmm. And it's better than I thought. So.
Okay.
So that's good. And one thing it does that Fez did not do is it gameplay wise, it carries all your stuff over.
Mm-hmm.
So all your items, all your levels, all your skills are in Lineage and Legacies. It's not like Fez where they completely cancel it out and have you play as a new character.
Ah, gotcha.
And I like that, don't you?
I honestly, like, I haven't finished Persona 3, so I have no...
I thought you beat on PSP.
No, I'm still playing through it.
Oh, shit, okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's cool, it's kind of like a new game plus, but you're continuing your game, so I can see how that's appealing.
And, well, yeah, not only that, but there's the other thing, Tales of Graces has a new game plus, anyway.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so let's talk about it from that standpoint. As a package, this is a very rich package. Tons of replay. Not only do you play, you know, the main story in Lineage and Legacies, there's a hidden dungeon that unlocks, I believe, once you beat after Lineage of Legacies. You could play through that hidden dungeon that's super long, that adds, some people tell me, another 30 hours of gameplay. It adds that. There's the Trials of Graces, which is a mode that allows you to do these battles and get on ranking boards.
Mm-hmm.
There's tons of side quests. Tons of side quests. There's a hidden form of the final boss of the main story that you can only unlock after you beat that Zonikaj.
Huh.
That I told you. There's the new game plus. There's tons of hidden skits, which are little story character sequences that are for humor or have character development. That you can see. Remember, we were talking about skits compared to the ones in Xenoblade.
Yeah,
yeah. So there's this game is just content full, and it's a single player game.
Wow.
It's there's DLC for it. Which, yes, I bought nothing. I think I spent too much money on costumes, but that's okay because I like costumes. But yes. I think even if you don't buy those costumes, this game is just content packed, which is nice.
Okay.
Completely content packed. Content packed. I know. Content packed. So pretty good package, right?
Yeah, it seems like it.
Okay, so we're done with that. Now let's talk about gameplay real quick.
Okay.
Okay, battles. The key thing is the battle system is still kind of the same. You can run around like you can if you hold the right trigger button. Tails is like this, has always been like a hybrid of real time and turn based. And you played Vesperia, so that's a good description, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, you control your main character, he attacks in real time. And then other actions are done turn-based, like using items. And all your other characters are controlled by AI, which you program. But you can also take that time to... You can also take the opportunity to fucking program them to cast spells and stuff as well. So if you need them to cast a spell that you feel that they're not doing with the AI, you can always just hit triangle, go to arts, and program them that way. And they'll cast that one spell, and then they'll go back to their... I guess AI programming, Alex.
Interesting.
So that's how it's always worked. But there's some key differences. The main difference in combat is one of the key things in Tails games has always been technique points, which is the equivalent of magic points in the series. Basically, you use sword techniques and stuff, and they cost technique points. They are gone.
Really?
They are completely gone in this game. What you have is, I believe it's called CC or CP, and the way it works is as you go up in levels, you have a CC of like say 10, and each attack will cost like some attacks, early attacks cost 2, 1, and stuff like that, and later attacks cost like 4 and 5. They'll all cost your CC, and basically you use it, and you can use it to combo people. Like, you know, you have attack that costs 2, 1, deplete it to 0. The way you charge it is by, I believe, either attacking, I think. I know for a fact the best way to charge it is by holding guard, by going defensive. Mm-hmm. So when you block attacks, you're charging CC again. But CC is also expended by doing the free roaming, or Tails always has this like dodge ability. When you dodge enemies, you also use CC.
Hmm.
So you have to be careful in that too.
So it's almost kind of like a stamina meter of some sort.
Yeah. But the thing is what's funny is it's not easier. You would think, oh, I don't have to buy orange gels, which are, you know, what previous Tails games used to heal TP.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
But it's really not, because you have to be careful. You expend that TP easy by not even attacking.
Mm-hmm.
By free roaming, your TP depletes quickly.
You're mean so CC.
CP. Too many TPs, Ps. But you know what so that's a key difference in the gameplay. Another big difference is dualizing. Now, why that is different is usually the closest thing to dualizing they had in Tails games is cooking. The way cooking would work is every character would have like a star.
Mm-hmm.
And you would cook, like, in the menu. You would buy ingredients and cook in the menu screen. And your character would become, like, a 5-star chef if you keep practicing with that one character, cooking different dishes. And what food would do was it would heal you without having to use any of your battle healing items. Because in Tails games, you can only carry 15 items. That did not change.
Okay.
Okay? So what they did in this one is that's gone. the way you cook, you can still cook. You go to shops and you do dualizing. Mm-hmm. So what you do is you pay a fee and they mix all these foods for you.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the only thing you dualize. What you do is you you could dualize scraps of items that you get to sell for big bucks.
Uh-huh.
Like you can find like a golden shell and make a sword that slays gods and sell it. Mm-hmm. You can't use it in combat, but you can do that. Dualizing also has other purposes. You can find attack shards, defense shards, evade shards, and you implement those into weapons and armor to enhance their effects.
Mm.
And it even goes further. You can even get legendary weapons like this. There's these gems or crystals or something. There'll be an air crystal. Say you have like a regular mithril sword. For maybe 2,000 gold, which is the currency of the Tales games,
mm-hmm.
you can merge that sword and create the legendary Windblade.
Uh-huh.
From, you know, with the crystal, with the mithril sword. And dualizing can be a very deep deep experience. And then they have this bottle too. And I'm losing the names. I'm sorry, Alex. But there's this bottle and you stick items inside of it and it uses a certain point system and you recharge the bottles at shops. What it does is say you need an item to make something to sell because you're low on money, right?
Right.
You put that item in the bottle, and it'll automatically make it. However, there's a catch. The better quality item, the less percentages. Some items are so low, it says very low chance of it. Don't even try it.
Huh.
So, basically, that's just some of the big changes they've made.
Okay.
To it. So that's what I like about the game. I like the changes. It's new. Some of the things... Here's the things I don't like. The voice acting can be spotty,
mm-hmm.
a little spotty at times. The graphics are aged.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Basically, this is a Wii game being transferred to high def.
Yeah.
Basically, that's all the graphics it is. Tales of Vesperia, released in 2008, designed with the 360 in mind, looks much better than this game does.
Mm-hmm.
Is it bad? No, but you can notice it. A lot of things are blocky. It looks like a PS2 game.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like something like, you know, if they high def Tales of the Abyss. It's high definition.
It kind of looks to me like the quality of Dragon Quest VIII when I played it on a PS2.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It really does. It's a pretty much PS2 graphics.
Right.
Yeah, so that's the other flaw. The other flaw, too, I will say, there's one other flaw. The world, the actual world of the game, feels smaller compared to other Tales games, too.
Oh, that's not good.
It's not bad, per se, but it is smaller, though. And at times, there's sometimes in the game, as much as I love this game, as much as I love this game, and it is going to be on my top 10 of the list if things work out the way I want them to, there's times when it just didn't feel as grand as, say, Vesperia.
Oh.
I love the story, I love the characters, but Vesperia felt so grand and so epic
mm-hmm.
because the world was so big.
Yeah.
But this game, as I love it, it just feels smaller. And it's not shorter. It's as long as any other Tales games I've played. It just doesn't feel as grand
mm-hmm.
as some of the other ones I've played, as Symphonia or Vesperia or even Abyss. It's just because the world just is a little bit smaller. And I don't know if they made it smaller because of the Wii or what.
No, that shouldn't be. Well, there's
Xenoblade. So, I don't know.
Do you think it's because of that prologue section of where you have to play as, like, kids and stuff? Do you think that took up a lot of the space and stuff?
No, not at all. I feel a lot of that is done in the adult saga because here's my problem, is in the early part of the adult part of the game,
mm-hmm.
you repeatedly stay in like one area for like 10 hours, and it's the area that you spent the childhood era in. And then when you actually go out in the world, it doesn't feel as big.
Wow, that kind of feels exhausting.
It's not exhausting. It just felt a little sad because other Tales games are big.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel tedium or anything like that. It's just, I was like, I wish it was a bit bigger type of thing.
Yeah.
You know? And it still has a lot of the conventions. Like, it has every Tales has a beach resort.
Mm-hmm.
They do. Or either a beach resort or a bath.
Mm-hmm.
For fan service-y things. And because it's an anime-style game.
Yeah.
And it has a battle arena. So those are still there.
Okay.
I think another reason, too, is because it does not have every Tales game, even Vesperia, and from what I understand, I could be wrong, Zillia does. It did not have it is one of the last JRPGs to have a traditional world map, too.
Mm-hmm.
And this one does not have a world map. Basically, when you get the airship, it's like Final Fantasy X.
I see.
So maybe that's it, too. So when am I going to give Tales of Graces? I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5.
Okay.
And it's only, the only reason is usually I would not take it down for things like, you know, the voice acting is not bad. It's spotty.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't take it even down for the I wouldn't take it down for the graphics, but I am taking it down because the world did not feel as big as others' Tales game. And I know maybe that's not fair, but if you have a PS2 game that is big, that feels bigger.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that I think that's a fair reason to
give it that rating.
Given that rating, and from what I understand, Zillia is a bigger world.
Okay.
Then so 4 out of 5. What do you think, Alex? Your thoughts?
I think it's fairly reasonable. I am the kind of person that if I am in the first town for like still like a 10 hours, like I get really bored. Like I miss that trope of. Yes, you are on a big adventure, so you go to different towns, you see the different things, and you solve all their problems and move on. It's just a trope that I really like about JRPGs or RPGs in general. And if I can't see myself going past, you know, like several hours in this game, if I'm still right. In the same freaking town for like 10 hours.
It has great characters, particularly Pascal and stuff. So those characters, because they're so interesting, if it was bland characters, and some people might say these are bland characters, but I don't think they were.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would have been in that situation of being bored, but I think the story about the characters and their interactions and how they mature, I forgot to say how they mature, like there's a they don't stay the same. When they're kids, they're all very different, which is nice.
Right.
They're all very different, and I really like that, and... And I think Tales of Graces is a fantastic game, probably be on my top 10. Like I said, 4 out of 5 because of what you stated. And it's not just that. The world is small.
Mm-hmm.
It's just small.
Right.
And I looked at my copy of Vesperia, got into my old save file, got in the airship, and was like, holy crap, this game's much bigger and it's 4 years older. So one other thing, too, before I go move on. I think Zillia is going to get announced. The head of the Tales games, Baba, he's been interviewed in these series of videos about Tales of Graces, right?
Uh-huh.
For US fans, like an interview that they've been doing. And he's talking about the development and all that. And the final part was supposed to come out May 24th. They delayed it. Guess why?
Why?
Because Baba has a big announcement regarding a big announcement for Western Tales fans.
Okay.
So I think it's a Tales of Zillia announcement.
Interesting.
So I hope Zillia is as grand as the other ones, but so good review.
Yeah, very good review.
Good review. And I will talk about Lollipop Chainsaw next week.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, well, I will. I'll probably finish that game tomorrow. I have time.
Okay. All right.
So
cool.
What's next on the agenda?
Funny you mentioned that, because the next segment is actually something that you came up with. So shouldn't you introduce the next segment?
Obviously. Okay. All right. So with all this talk about JRPGs and stuff, it's only appropriate that we go to one of the eras of time that they were very prevalent. We're gonna talk about retro gaming for once.
Oh, my gosh.
I feel we need to talk. We have to talk about retro gaming. You know, it's always fun. You know, and it's been kind of a slow week. Well, it's at post E3, right?
I know. I was going to say, like, last week was not slow.
No. Well, this week has. It always happens.
Though. Yeah.
You know, like, the next month will be slow. What we're going to talk about is we're going to probably talk more retro stuff, but today we're going to talk about the 16-bit era.
Yes.
Yes. And there's a lot to talk about. We could do multiple shows on this, but we're going to talk about just some general things about the 16-bit era, our opinions and things like that.
Yeah. Specifically, we're going to focus on the Super Nintendo, the Genesis, and the TurboGrafx-16. We're not going to talk about the handhelds that were released during this time period. No. We're just going to talk about that era in general.
And technically, they're not 16-bit.
Well, technically, so. They're not 16-bit, but they're kind of part of that weird generation, which is really, really weird.
Yeah, and we have to talk about this TurboGrafx because even though a lot of people forgot about it, it is to me like the Dreamcast of that era.
It's like interesting.
It's a great system that didn't sell well, but it had tons of great games on it.
I agree,
and it's a great system. So let's start with you. Let's start with a basic question, my friend.
Okay.
What is your fondest memory of the 16-bit era?
Fondest memory of the 16-bit era? Well, I think I'll answer that by actually kind of telling you about like my experience in the 16-bit era. I think that's more fair. During this time period, when the Genesis and the Super Nintendo came out, I was actually still living in the Philippines. So my exposure to a lot of the games on the 16-bit era was fairly limited. In fact, it's actually a lot more limited compared to the previous era, which is, you know, the Nintendo Entertainment System and the Famicom and all that stuff. Majority of the time that I was playing during this time period, I was focusing more on Final Fantasy and a lot more fighting games than anything else, like Samurai Showdown, the Fatal Fury series, Mortal Kombat, the Street Fighter series, and of course Final Fantasy 4 or 2 at the time, and Final Fantasy 6, which was 3 at the time.
What was it? Okay, you were in the Philippines at this time. Was it numbered the same as we got it here? Or was it? Did you get it as 2, 4, and 6?
I imported games from the United States because I had family here. So what they would do is a lot of the games that I wanted, they would just kind of ship it over here.
I see. Okay.
So that's how it worked out. And of course, you know, that as far as the fighting games go, it's not just those. I also played the two Ranma fighting games that they released in the United States and stuff. And people actually don't know this, Anthony, but Ranma Super Battle, which is the second one, actually did come out in the United States, but in very limited runs.
I heard about that. And I know you're a big Ranma fan, too.
Yeah.
So that helps out as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because the at the time, Viz Video, you know, all on VHS and stuff like that, like, they only had, like, maybe the first 10 episodes of Ranma 1/2 in the first season available. And they had the OVAs available, too, which is really weird because we haven't even gotten to that point. So when I got Super Battle, like, I was, like, seeing these characters, and I'm like, what the hell? Like, who are these characters? Like, I've never even heard of half of these people, you know?
Yeah. It was kind of like, you know what that reminds me of? Remember looking
what?
When Dragon Ball Z was here and they would only go to the Frieza saga? Not even the end of the Frieza saga. It would go like midway and I would see.
Not even finish it.
Yeah. Goku wasn't even a Super Saiyan. And I'd like see him, like, it would say Gohan with blonde hair. And then it would be Great Saiyaman and, you know, and Boo and Cell and all these guys. Like, who the fuck are these? And why is Vegeta blonde? Why is Goku called Gogeta? And now I know all that, but back then I was like, why the fuck?
Yeah.
Cause in EGM, I don't know if you remember this, but in that era, they had all these, advertisements from like the equivalent of what PlayAsia is now.
Uh-huh.
The website that sells import stuff of video games.
Yeah.
And they had all this stuff, and I would look at it with fascination. Uh-huh. And I was like, they sell soundtracks for Final Fantasy IV? What's Final Fantasy IV? You know,
yeah.
And stuff. So it was the same thing, so.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, most of the games that I got were all from the United States and stuff. And I actually have this really interesting story to tell you. So there was this one Christmas that Samurai Showdown came out for the Super Famicom, and we had modded Super Famicom cartridges over here, and they have like the little notch in the back. Now the notch in the back is unique to the American version of the Super Nintendo, so that you won't be able to play Super Famicom games on the Super Nintendo.
And that Samurai Showdown you were playing, which is actually called, I believe, Samurai Spirits in Japan, right?
Something like that. Yeah, okay. I couldn't read Japanese. So, but I also had Fatal Fury Special, and my grand aunt actually purchased Samurai Showdown for me for Christmas, and she said, "You're not going to be able to open this until Christmas, but I can buy this for you today, okay?" And I said, "Okay." So she, you know, she wrapped up the gift and stuff. And the way that we get it in the Philippines is that we either get them like just bare bones without any manuals and stuff. But this particular one had like the manual. It was like in a plastic case and stuff. It was really fancy. So that was there, and it was under the tree, and I said to myself, I can't wait for this. So I actually, when my my grand aunt wasn't around, with, you know, like because we had my nanny there too, and they're both out, I actually snuck underneath the Christmas tree, carefully opened the gift package for Samurai Showdown, and popped open with like a screwdriver, like the actual cartridge, and I swapped the cartridge with Fatal Fury Special.
Nice.
So basically, I was already playing my gift like literally like months before I was supposed to get it.
Nice. Samurai. So you play Samurai Spirit Showdown. That's what we know it as. So
yeah. So I played it like weeks before and stuff like that. And of course, you know, my grand aunt like didn't know what the hell it was and didn't even bother like to see like what I was playing. So of course, you know, I was like, yay! All right, awesome.
And you know what, Samurai Showdown is still a great game.
Yeah. The Super Nintendo version is up for debate. It's just, they did a lot of sacrifices to make that thing work on the Super Nintendo.
Fortunately, though, nowadays, the arcade port is easily available.
Yes.
You can, you know, there's compilations for, you know, PSN, there's the actual game itself for PlayStation, it's even on the Virtual Console, so.
Right.
So, yeah, gotta love those Neo Geo games.
Yeah. Now, that's the Super Nintendo. As far as the Genesis was concerned, I had a couple of friends who had the Genesis and stuff, but I was more of a Nintendo guy, and I was kind of like competing with this guy who owned a Genesis and stuff, and he was, he actually had Phantasy Star 2, which I thought was great looking, and then I finally got a Mega Drive, which is the Japanese version of the Genesis.
And they also call it that in Europe, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, I did get like Sonic 2 for it, and it didn't have region lock, I think, at the time. And then later on, some of the later games got region locked and stuff, which kind of sucked. And then I got Batman for the Genesis, which was fantastic. Holy shit. Sunsoft Batman, like another version of it. Because I saw that the Genesis had a completely different version than the Batman that I used to have when I had the NES. And I was like, damn, I'm getting that. So I finished that. Played Streets of Rage, fantastic games. And of course, you know, I fell in love with Phantasy Star 3 because that was just really unique at the time, you know, like a generations type of gameplay. No one else has done that after that, you know? And yeah, I think that's pretty much it. TurboGrafx-16 never made it to the Philippines, so yeah. There goes that.
Yeah.
How about you? Like, so how was your like 16-bit era gaming, you know, here in the United States and stuff?
I started off with Genesis. I then got a Super Nintendo and later on because I was spoiled. I'll admit that. and then what's funny is around 92, 94 when the TurboGrafx was dying, I got one too. And it was at that
when it was dying.
what's funny is well, and you got to remember too about the TurboGrafx too is that the TurboGrafx died early on here. And it's called PC Engine in Japan. PC Engine had games produced as late as 1999.
I can believe that because Dracula X came out on that system.
Yeah, Rondo of Blood, which is a great Castlevania. We didn't officially get it here until 2007 in the remake. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't count the Castlevania game that got the rendition of the game that got released on the Super Nintendo because that was really, really watered down.
I heard it's a very different game.
It is, yeah. Absolutely.
Totally different game, so.
It had the format of the original Castlevanias, which is like one more so one than it did like the PC Engine version, which I was actually really upset about because I really wanted to play the PC Engine version.
Yeah. Yeah, the PC Engine version's great. But anyway, I got that. And when I got the PC Engine, my grandparents had bought, because I was raised by my grandparents, they got it for me at a garage sale.
Okay.
Because, you know, and it came with the CD drive. So It came with all these, it came with a big box. I mean, this person was trying to get rid of it. And the kid was trying to get rid of it to get a Super Nintendo, which I already had. I'm like, yeah. Ha ha ha. So I'm like, I was okay getting a dead system at that point. And when I opened the box, there's all this stuff. Like, there's, you know, there was all these shmups, and, you know, there was Yee's Books 1 and 2.
I remember that.
And you know I'm a big Yee's fan.
Uh-huh.
There's Yee's Books 1 and 2. There was Cosmic Fan. I said, though, Exile, both, you know, Exile, the original version of Exile, all these JRPGs. There's all these shmups, you know, Gates of Thunder, Lords of Thunder. Both great shoot-em-ups.
Yeah.
You know, you could get those easily on Virtual Console and stuff today.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what else did they fucking have? You know, Star Soldier games. And then, of course, there was the regular TurboGrafx games, which were in cards. There was, like, Bonk's Adventure, which is a great platformer. You know, you know, Dungeon Explorer. All these great games for
it. Mostly Hudson-type games, right?
Yeah, a lot of Hudson games. A lot, you know, it even had its own Adventure Island.
Yes, I was about to say that.
Yeah. So the thing about the TurboGrafx is like the Dreamcast to a lot of people, or even to a degree of Saturn. Like, a lot of people say, oh, those systems died, but they actually had a lot of great games.
Yeah. And I remember seeing, like, the graphics of, like, Valis 2 and stuff on there, and I was like, holy shit! It's like an anime!
The Valis games were kick-ass. Have you played them, or...?
I played Valis 3 on a Genesis.
Oh, you got to play on TurboGrafx. The problem with that, though, is that they've never been emulated.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very hard to get. The Valis games are great action platforming games.
Yeah.
But let's move on from the TurboGrafx to my experience with Genesis and Super Nintendo. Genesis has a lot of some of my favorite games of all time. I loved, you know, Castlevania Bloodlines.
I remember that.
Contra Hard Corps. My RPG on the Genesis was a Phantasy Star, but it wasn't 2 or 3. It was Phantasy Star 4.
Right, you mentioned that.
And, I mean, you know what? People talk about the death of Eris. I'm not going to say anything if you've never played it, because Phantasy Star 4 is easily able to get that game. Because it's in tons of Genesis compilations.
Uh-huh.
There's a death in that game that is so unexpected. I was pretty reeling from it. More so,
and it's kind of interestingly short compared to 2 and 3, too.
It is, but I love the story in that game.
Mm-hmm.
I love how it, because of the death of that character, becomes so personal.
Yeah.
So, there's that game. I also love Beyond Oasis.
I remember that.
Beyond Oasis was a great Zelda Arabian-type game.
Yeah.
So, you know, Vector Man... Vector Man was kind of Sega's attempt at Donkey Kong Country, but with pre-rendered graphics, but it was still a fun game. It didn't look as good as Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah.
Which is, in my opinion, the only thing Donkey Kong Country is good for. But, I mean, that's mean. But, but Vector Man was actually a fun game.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you played those.
I never played Vector Man because I never arrived in the Philippines. In fact, actually, a lot of my Genesis gaming happened, you know, around the turn of the century when I did a lot more emulation and stuff. And that's when I actually discovered a huge library of Genesis games like Comic Zone. You know, that's really fantastic. Like, I have that on my PS3 right now, and it still holds up because it's really colorful. The idea is very novel, which is great. And of course, there's the other games like Alien Storm that I played, like when I got my Mega Drive at the time and stuff, which is fantastic. And the Genesis had some really great arcade titles. You know, like a good example would be like Michael Jackson's Moonwalker. You know, we've talked about the Shinobi series before, which are fantastic action games.
Yeah,
I have
that Shinobi 3. I mean, Shinobi 3 and Sonic are amongst my favorite games of all time, and I'm going to do on my YouTube channel a top 30. Those games would definitely be on the list.
Right.
And assist-wise. So, I mean, the Genesis had an amazing array of games. I would recommend the people to buy the Sonic Mega Collection.
Okay.
Because there's a ton of Genesis games on there. Over 40 Genesis games. And then it'll have the Genesis version of, say, like Altered Beast. And then it'll have its original arcade port. So, yeah, it's a great collection. It has, like, you know, the Sega Genesis version of Golden Axe, and then it'll have the arcade version on there.
Nice.
And it's still easily found. Sonic Mega Collection, you could easily find that game. So, I mean, and it has, like, Alien Storm and Beyond Oasis and stuff. You know what game is missing from Sega Genesis compilations, though, I enjoyed? What? Eternal Champions.
Oh, geez, really?
I like that game. It's not a good fighting game, but it was just fun because how cheesy it was.
It was weird because it allowed you to play with three buttons and then six. It was a weird fighting game. I could never beat the Eternal Champion. He was a fucking cheap ass bitch.
I did once. Once.
God.
Once.
I mean, I like the characters. They were pretty creative, but. Holy crap, is the Eternal Champion a bitch. Oh, I could not beat that guy.
Fuck him. Okay, so Super Nintendo for me, what I got to say about Super Nintendo? Final Fantasy VI, Chrono Trigger, Link to the Past, all amongst my favorite games of all time. Castlevania IV is on there, which I love. Let's see. Go through these Ghosts and Goblins. Was it Super Ghouls and Ghosts?
Yes.
Whatever. Super Ghouls and Ghosts, great game. F-Zero, which was great. Mario Kart was great at the time. I got a free Mario Kart recently from the Nintendo Club. Doesn't hold up well at all. Especially at the time I was still playing a lot of Mario Kart 7. So you can, you know.
Pales in comparison.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what's funny? It's the only Mario Kart that I can think of. No. I think Mario Kart 7 you can jump as well. So yeah, it's a very odd game. So there's that ActRaiser, which you said you didn't get into very much.
I didn't get into it at all. I played ActRaiser 2 when I moved to the United States. And I actually enjoyed that one more than ActRaiser 1, just because the thing is, like, a lot of people liked the whole city aspect of ActRaiser 1, but at the time I was already playing, like, SimCity for the PC. So that's why I couldn't understand why people liked it when there was, like, a deeper experience somewhere else. Hell, like, SimCity on the same console had a deeper experience than that and stuff. And I felt it was just tacked on. So that's why I never got into that particular part of the series. But 2 was pretty good.
Yeah, there's ActRaiser. Yeah, I like ActRaiser. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, and then there was the Soul Blazer games, Soul Blazer and Illusion of Gaia. And I will say Illusion of Gaia is another favorite of mine on the Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. I love the story in that game. A lot of people don't like it, but I love the story. And it had one of the saddest endings of a game I've ever seen. I mean, basically, it's about a kid that's trying to find his father.
Yeah.
And him and his friends, they go on this journey. And here's the shocking thing. You get attached to the friends and stuff, and they each start, you know, not die. Okay, it doesn't end well.
Uh-huh.
And basically, when you get to the end, there's this very sweet scene where, you know, it's a great game. You just have to play
it. Okay. But that's not easily found, though.
On the Super Nintendo, probably not.
So, I mean, you might as well spoil it right now, I think.
Okay. Basically, it's a kid trying to find his father. All his friends, they go on this journey, and they have a little pig, and he falls in love with the princess. And him and his friends and the princess, they go on this journey, and all the friends die or something happens to them. They get transformed and they all die. And as you progress through the game, each friend, you lose each friend as you go.
Oh, jeez.
And then there's a scene where if I remember, it's been a while, you're attacked by cannibals and the pig sacrifices himself to protect you.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's a pretty bleak game. And basically, what happens at the end is you find out that there's part of the story is a comet's coming around. So you destroy the comet and then you fight Dark Gaia. Mm-hmm. When you beat Dark Gaia, I forgot what exactly happens. The world is already decaying, and in order to save it, he has to alter reality.
Jesus.
And he alters reality, and the game basically ends with him and the princess and all his friends again in this modern world, mm-hmm. meeting for the first time. And I thought that was a real beautiful kind of bittersweet That's ending. Cool. I really like they all died and stuff, but he altered reality and they all forgot about their experiences, but they're all meeting again for the very first
That's
time.
That's really cool. And
I think that game's mm-hmm. great. So anyway, I want to ask you a question about something about the 16-bit era.
Sure.
We have time. We all know about the 16-bit wars.
Yes.
What's your stance on it?
I was more a Nintendo guy just because the hardware was stronger, I felt, in some cases. Now, one of the things that Sega used to take advantage of is the fact that how fast their processor was. And in some ways, the MIDI on the Genesis was actually really good. I mean, we had Yuzo Koshiro making some really fantastic soundtracks, you know, for the Genesis at the time. But then we also had some sweeping orchestral soundtracks and sampling that was happening on the Super Nintendo era. So it was, you know, in the end, you know, it's really just a matter of preference. And as far as arcade quality kind of graphics and feel, the Super Nintendo definitely had it over the Genesis. But again, like I said, like at the time, it was purely something that was hardware based. And even right. though the Super Nintendo had a much slower processor than the Genesis, I mean, if you're getting a shmup, you're getting it on the Genesis. Because if you got it on the Super Nintendo, there's a lot of slowdown. That was obvious at the time. Yeah. But for fighting games, like I used to hold tournaments for fighting games when I was back in the Philippines. Like every time my birthday rolled around, like we would play like Dragon Ball and, you know, Ranma and, you know, like Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat and stuff. It would always be on the Super Nintendo. Also because the Genesis allowed you to actually use three buttons on a fighting game. Now, if you know anything about fighting games, three buttons isn't enough. You know, so, right. you know, I was aiming for a more arcade quality experience, so the Super Nintendo was it. So, and you know, if you look at the Super Nintendo fighting games and stuff, that was a huge and really good array of fighting games. I mean, I only mentioned Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, and Ranma, but you can't forget that Killer Instinct came out on that system, man.
And that was a good port. Uh-huh. That's actually a good port of that game. I mean, it looked. I think it use the same technology as Donkey Kong Country. Yeah, it's a good game. It plays well.
Yes, it did.
It played really well. I will say too, a lot of people tend to forget. I still get in arguments over people. People tend to think that the Mortal Kombat on the Genesis is superior, but the only reason they think that is because the Genesis version still has
the first
blood.
One. Let's make that clear.
The first one. Yeah, the first Mortal Kombat, yes.
Uh-huh.
Mortal Kombat on the Super Nintendo was actually technically superior. And then if you want to get into Mortal Kombat 2, well, that's a no-brainer. Super Nintendo superior. So, I mean, you're right. The Super Nintendo was pretty good for arcade experiences. I think on RPGs, on RPGs, though, I think a lot of people underestimate the Genesis.
That's easy to do because the most prominent series on that platform was Phantasy Star.
Yeah, but there was other ones. And then if you want to count the Sega CD, Sega CD is part of Genesis. Okay. Yeah. So you had Lunar, you know, Potful Mail and all those games on there too. So I think in a lot of people give me hell for this. They're neck and neck in terms of RPGs, but I think I'm a little biased, so the Super Nintendo has maybe better.
Well, the problem with the Sega CD is the fact that it was like a $200 add-on to an already existing system, and The way that people saw it at the time was that's two different platforms, even though the other one is an add-on.
Yeah, it
was difficult to kind of say like that the Genesis had all these RPGs because really they're not even considering the CD platform because, you know, who had that at the time, you know?
Right.
It was a difficult sell, especially since I think, if I remember correctly, wasn't the CD add-on more expensive than the system itself?
I believe so. The Genesis at one point was $99. Yeah, and the Sega CD was $200. You're right about that at the time. Now I think it's easier to say that it's both one and the same. But back then, you know, there was a differentiation. Because
it's still
of that.
Difficult to kind of treat them together, though, because even now we don't see those Sega CD games at all emulated anywhere. Like it's only like.
Sonic CD was the exception.
Yes, of course. I mean, that's on the iPad. I mean, you know, I mean, it could be ported to any system, basically.
And I have a PS3 version of it, so.
So, I mean, as far as... But everything else on that platform, like remember the Bram Stoker's Dracula on that system? Like, that's not anywhere. I mean, it's difficult, or even like Night Trap, it's like, it's not anywhere.
Vay was ported to iOS.
Vay?
Yeah.
But not. But that's what I'm saying, though. It's not all the experiences made it, which is why it is still this kind of rare experience to have, which is why people still consider it as a separate platform, I think. Because I mean the Genesis, you can find all those games all over the place. But the Sega CD, because it's just a lot of the stuff there is locked in time, meaning, you know, like, you know, they're not going to make, you know, they're not going to port over CC and Music Factory, like, make your own music video.
No, God,
you know?
No.
But you know what I mean, though? That's kind of like what I'm saying, is that a lot of those experiences, like Night Trap, you'll never probably see that on a current gen platform at all, even as a remake, or even as a downloadable title. We're not going to see that.
I want a Night Trap
but,
remake.
But that's just because, you know.
I'm joking.
Like, it's locked. That's why I meant when I said it's locked in time, and we can't really consider it as together because of how inaccessible they are.
I disagree with you, respectfully, my friend. Reason I disagree is because it's the same thing as I viewed the TurboGrafx that had a CD on, and a lot of the people in the community that collect TurboGrafx don't see a differentiation between the CD and the TurboGrafx. So let me explain that because
my view on that, though. I think TurboGrafx 16 CD was tightly integrated from the very beginning. Like, I don't think that I knew the TurboGrafx 16 without the CD at all. Because those two were together. Like, that's when my introduction to the TurboGrafx 16 was with Bonk's Adventure, Valis, and Ys 1 and 2. I mean, it was never a separate thing. They were always marketed together. If you want to push it further, if you want to say that the Sega CD is fucking part of, like, the Genesis, let's lump in the 32X in there.
I was planning on doing that anyway, because it is, they all required the Genesis, they were just add-ons, they are part of the Genesis. I can see why people would differentiate it, and it's very fair to differentiate it, Alex, and your points are valid. I don't want ports of Night Trap or Sewer Shark or CNC or Barkley Shut Up and Jam Basketball Simulator, okay, or Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. I don't want any of that shit, okay? Oh, and one note before someone gets on my ass: Lunar does not count because the Sega CD version of Lunar is very different from the PS1 and PSP versions. Just wanted to say that. So that doesn't count. I don't see it that way because it is part of the system. And yes, you can count the 32X, my friend. You can fucking count it. It's shitty. I don't think there is anything good on it.
Yeah.
There's that Knuckles game.
Oh, crap.
Knuckles, what, Chaotix? But that's it. I mean, and I heard I never played it, but I heard it's good. But that's
impossible
to fucking
find. But also the reason why I
consider
them as, like, separate consoles is because you can't play a 32X game on a Genesis. nor can you play a Sega CD game on the Genesis.
You have to have the
Genesis. It's a requirement. Then
it's the same with the Turbo Graphics.
I still don't think that it's, you know, that you can lump them together and stuff. Because if that's the case, then the Sega, you know, then the Sega Genesis system was overwhelmingly the best console of that generation by that definition.
I don't know if it's best. The add-ons don't make it best. We're just going to go on. Okay, well, the same probably would have happened with the Super Nintendo if the PlayStation, the original PlayStation deal did not fall through. But
that's the difference, though, because the PlayStation deal never went through. It never got released.
Right. It didn't. Yeah, it didn't
happen. But the Sega CD and the 32X did.
Yes. Are they good? Not necessarily. I think Sega CD actually has some gems. To a degree. It does have a few good games.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the point. The point is I feel because it's a part of it, you know, it's the same thing as saying, oh, well, you know, the same thing with Super Scope or something. So we're not going to agree on this. No, because
the Super Scope, you know, had a cartridge that you can use on the Super Nintendo. It had the same storage medium. That's, you know, you're missing the point.
It still required the system. No, I'm not, because it still required the system.
It required the system, but again, the storage medium was completely different.
Doesn't matter if it's different. Okay, we're...
That's what I'm saying. You can't lump them together.
I feel you can. I feel Sega CD and 32X are part of the Genesis. Anyway, let's move on. What else do we talk about this era?
Super Nintendo, but you already talked about it.
Well, anything else? Mother 2?
Mother 2 and Earthbound? Yeah, I guess so. That never arrived in the Philippines. So I missed that. I missed the games that I missed from the Super Nintendo era would have to be Yoshi's Island 2 or Yoshi's Island in general. The Zelda game that came out for it. Super Metroid I obviously played, as well as Contra. Played the Castlevanias on there obsessively. The Illusion of Gaia, missed out on that. And Earthbound, missed out on that too.
Well, when did you play Earthbound? Like years
I never
later?
Did.
I thought you had played Earthbound.
On emulation for like a very short time, but I never really played through it. I know its value. I mean, I know it's a very important game and stuff, and I still like the idea behind it. I did play Mother 3 for a little bit. You know, whatever Japanese I could freaking muster, which is none.
Oh, you know. Shit. You never played the fan patch?
No, I never did. So, yeah. And of course, I'm like looking at the price. It's like $200 now. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Why don't they release a virtual console?
No, because Nintendo, you know, they know so much about things.
Nintendo, shall we talk about them then? Moving on.
Let's move on to our newslog segment. Yay!
We argued about Super Sega Genesis. Let's not argue because I agree with you on this one,
Jesus
Alex.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, the first news article that we're going to talk about. Pikmin 3, no online multiplayer.
I see.
So this is an excerpt from Polygon. Miyamoto explained this is due to technical difficulties of online connections. And listen to this. I want you to listen to this carefully. All you guys out there too, listening out there. You have to be very careful that you don't drop frames as you're trying to sync up with other players over what could be a very great physical distance over the internet. In a situation of Pikmin, for example, since you would have lots of individual small creatures, the Pikmin, whose every movement and location is going to be really important in the game, it would be very difficult to sync up over an internet connection. So what we've decided to do is focus on the single player and local multiplayer aspects, which are really fun. But unfortunately, no online multiplayer for Pikmin 3. But the co-op local multiplayer is really fun.
Oh,
I want to hear what your thoughts of this are.
Oh my god. They're worried about that?
Yeah, that's from Miyamoto, dude.
I mean, the man's a genius, but online's not his thing. You know, he knows level design, he knows how to make great games, but I'm sorry, online's not his field.
But it should be.
I mean,
it should be, because that's what we expect of somebody like him.
Yeah. Oh my God. He's worried about what was that game that came out for PS3 a couple years back? The one where they had like 256 people.
Meg.
First person shooter. Meg. Yes, massive action game. I forgot about that. Okay. If they could do that, then why not Pikmin?
Well, not only that. I mean, you're playing like on PC, we're playing StarCraft 2, which has like literally thousands of units on screen.
No, fuck that. StarCraft 1. Remember that game?
Of course I do.
Yeah, I mean,
and how about this? How about this? Same? Max Payne 3 right now, where every bullet is rendered individually during a multiplayer online match with all the physics calculated in real time.
I'm face palming.
So this is what I was telling you about. This is Nintendo proving hilariously how they don't know how to handle online. And that's the funny thing is, like, last week we were all expecting to hear about, you know, like, all this awesome, like, new online features and all that stuff and how they're going to be integrated into their games. But they never showed how.
The only thing we got was a confirmation that there's no friend codes.
Actually, that's not confirmed either, because Iwata said that it's going to be there.
Oh, I thought a noted game journalist said that. Well,
no,
whatever.
Because Iwata today basically said, nah, actually, we do have friend codes.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not a bad thing that Pikmin isn't online then.
I know, right? Well, I think that they're trying to, as far as the friend codes go, I think they're trying to copy it the way that they're doing it on the 3DS, so that might not be a bad thing.
It's still a pain in the ass. I mean, when I added you to 3DS, Anthony, what's your friend code? I have to type it in. Okay, what's your... It's still annoying. Yeah. I mean, it's not like, oh, I'll send you a friend request, or
yeah,
you'll send me a friend.
Yeah, it's not intuitive at all.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
It's
just disheartening to see them kind of totally flub, like, multiple times launching, like, on a brand new console. And they even talked about how they're going to have an achievement point system, but it's not mandatory. And I'm like, so why even have it?
Oh, so they're going trophy route.
Something along those lines.
Well, the difference with trophies is they implement it later, and it is a requirement now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a lot of older games still don't have trophies.
Well, yes.
Because, yeah. So it's a little bit different, but Nintendo's way of... Dude, let me tell you this. Can I be honest? I don't think I'm going to wait on the Wii U. I'm not getting it at launch. I'm saying that right now. I have made my decision.
Jeez.
100%. 100%. I was expecting... You know what I was expecting at E3, what? Alex? To go... Because I told you, I'm going to get a Wii U. Remember? Yeah. And you said, oh, I'm going to get one too at launch. I was going to go in and fucking define the fact that I'm getting a fucking Wii U. I was like, yeah, I'll get to see what launch titles. It came out the opposite. I'm like, I'm not fucking getting one now. I'm not going to buy one to play Batman Arkham Asylum, own two copies of it. Because my Wii U doesn't have shit for it. I'm not doing that, man.
But it has. But Batman has the gamepad on his wrist now, and you have armor, and you have mini games like when you play Assassin's Creed 3 and all that stuff, and you can,
Fuck that. I'm sorry. It's in this whole Pikmin bullshit. I like Miyamoto. He's a legend. He does great things, but his reasons for not having online, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Now, am I saying that every game needs to be online? Hell no. No. But there's some Nintendo franchises that can benefit from it. Mario Kart, you know, well, which has it now, but you know what I mean. Mario Kart, Smash Brothers, and a lot. And I've heard, I've never gotten into Pikmin, but people have always said Pikmin would be perfect for online. And you're having a game that is perfect for online, but not give it online on a next-gen console.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about my tangent, but that pisses me off, man.
Yeah. Again, this confirms my feeling that Nintendo is hilariously underprepared when it comes to online. They've had 5-6 years to study their competition, to be able to develop an online system that would complement their existing fan base and new and curious fan bases. But instead, they've chose to not commit to the online initiative.
You know, and if you want to make again the argument that single player games, you know, that not every game needs online, okay. But there's other ways to implement it, DLC, or ways like games like Dark Souls, Demon Souls, right? But this is like saying, oh, Smash Brothers won't have online.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think every game needs online, but I'm saying this is a game that I feel, and people have told me over the years, that needs it. Isn't Pikmin a RTS or something? So do you feel Pikmin would benefit from having an
absolutely.
Online?
Absolutely. Especially for co-op.
You probably
yeah.
have had more experience. Yeah, I'm like I said, I like Nintendo. I think they're great at making games. They're just, they don't know what the fuck they're doing when it comes to marketing, when it comes to online, I don't know. I like my 3DS. You know, it's getting great support, but the Wii U can wait.
And by the way, didn't Smash Brothers get online support on the Wii?
Yes, it did.
I mean, I don't see the difference here.
I don't either, Alex.
I don't know.
I agree with you 100%. Let me ask you a question. This is bugging me. Not really bugging me, but I'm very curious. Are you going to buy a Wii U at launch?
No. I was already on the fence, and I was hoping E3 would convince me to actually make me comfortable buying one at launch. Not anymore.
So you feel the same way I do?
Yeah, it has prevented me from actually wanting to get one.
I mean, there's, you know, Zombie U looks interesting, and Rayman Legends looks interesting, and I don't mind another 2D, but that's not enough. And look, I know people want a new Zelda. I don't think that's fair because we got a new one last year.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay,
but at least tease us. Like, have, like, you know, like, the footage last year. That was a great tease, right? You know, like, it's kind of like saying, well, these are the possibilities with this platform, you know?
Yeah, or that, even that Metroid. You know what? I would have bought one if they had that Star Fox and fucking Metroid crossover that was rumored. If that's mm-hmm. real. I mean, I know you're not as interested in it as me. Or interested at all. But for me, I'm like that. And as much as you're not interested, let's be fair, that's more enticing than what they offered at launch.
Well, every time there's a console launch, the way that you do it is you basically set up this idea that there is longevity to your platform. That really is it. Like when the 360 was announced, they did exactly that. This is what's going to happen in the future. This is the future of gaming. This is how we see the future, et cetera, et cetera. You're laying down gravel so that you can eventually drive on it later and stuff, like on the pavement and stuff, and kind of see all these, you know, these sights and stuff along the way. What Nintendo has basically done is they've laid the gravel last year, but they forgot to paint like the lanes and stuff. So you're just kind of driving all over the place. You don't really know what your focus is. And they claim that the reason why they had 3 press conferences is so that they can have more focus. But I think they lost that focus. And when everybody thought that there was going to be a surprise after Nintendo Land and realized that Nintendo Land was it was basically Nintendo sign that they were backing down from what they said last year, that they wanted to serve the core in this new console.
What the fuck was that ending with fireworks? I'm still baffled.
Oh, it was
that.
Rendered by Nintendo Land.
I know. I'm like, is,
and it wasn't flattering fireworks. It was, again, it was like as if like somebody set off fireworks, but there were duds.
You're the theme. Let me ask you a question real quick. This is a little off topic. You're the theme. You're the theme park expert. Sure. Okay. When a theme park closes, Do they always do that firework
thing? California Adventure is World of Color. Disneyland has fireworks at 9:45 in the evening. And Universal doesn't do anything. And Magic Mountain does some sort of thing. I don't know.
Okay, I was just curious. Yeah. Because I that's how I felt that Nintendo was trying to make this into a legitimate theme park and failed. Like a virtual one. I don't know. Dude, I don't know. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm going on tangents, but Nintendo, they confused me.
You're not the only one. I heard somebody else got confused with that, too. Like, their messaging and stuff. It's like, by the way, we're coming out with a console this year, but we don't know what we're doing with it.
I don't even know if they should. They should wait till next
year. If they wait till next year, they are gonna frickin' die.
Oh, that's true.
And that's why I kept telling you last week, Nintendo had the most to lose and win this E3, because guess what? Sony's not going to release information about a console releasing next year. Microsoft's not going to do the same thing. They don't want to cut into their holiday sales. That's exactly the mistake Nintendo did last year. They released information about the Wii U. Guess what? Wii sales plummeted. Because it was way too far in advance to announce a new platform. And so Sony and Microsoft saw that. They're like, fuck that. Let's wait.
I don't know. You know what, though? Nintendo's not all bad, because right now I don't have it open, obviously, but I'm holding my 3DS, which I adore, yeah. Alex. And there's a lot of good stuff. So that handheld-wise, they're keeping me happy.
They're trying to basically copy Apple. Because what they're trying to do is they're doing these Nintendo Directs, which are similar to like Apple press conferences. Like, because Apple used to have their own conference, which is Macworld. They dissolved that, and they basically started doing private conferences within their campus at Cupertino. And, you know, some of it is, and then they release the video online. Guess what Nintendo's doing? They're not basically announcing all the big stuff, and they're just doing private stuff online on your, you know, on Nintendo Direct. Which I'm like, you guys are fucking stupid. You know, Apple has more than one product. They have a huge line of products to announce and actually, like, update. And this is not, they don't do this because, you know, other than the fact that they just have too much products to release.
And you know, sometimes the Nintendo Directs are good, like when they announced Last Story.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're crap.
Like the one with Iwata, like the one before last week.
Yeah, wasn't that the one where everyone thought it was going to be Pandora's Tower?
And then, of course, they were and all like, oh, by the way, we have a patch for Mario Kart 7.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, we have a patch to fix the problems in Kid Icarus gameplay. It's like, what? It's like, you don't...
If you're going to make Nintendo Direct it... Like, the first couple Nintendo Directs were important because they announced, like, Xenoblade. Those were pretty big announcements, sure, right? Yeah. But now they're like, oh, you know, let's announce patches now. Like, you know what's funny is I got on my PlayStation today, and there was... I don't even remember what games they were. There was new patches for two games. That downloaded, you know, that automatic thing the PlayStation does? And I don't even know what the fuck games they were. And it's like, okay, what did they patch? I didn't even know they got patches. So I'm like, really, yeah. Nintendo?
Anyways, I don't want to continue this because it feels like we're bashing Nintendo. The reason why we're so critical of Nintendo is because we want them to succeed. And so far, they've totally been flubbing it. And mind you, guys... There was only one person out of all the emails that we got last week that basically said they were going to get the system on day one. That is a bad freaking sign. And I know for a fact that the rest of those guys who emailed us last week are huge Nintendo fans as well. When you basically convince people that you don't want the platform on day one, you got to freaking reevaluate your marketing.
I think you're even more concerned because out of both of us, you know, I'm not as critical of Nintendo as you.
I am really worried. I am genuinely worried.
And I think my reaction has you concerned because, like I said, I'm not as critical of Nintendo as you
are. But if you get critical of it, that's scary.
Yeah, I mean, I'm scared because I got critical of something Nintendo did. You know, I'm like, but like I said, they're keeping me happy on a positive.
3DS has a fantastic lineup. Holy shit.
Yes. Yes, the 3DS is kicking ass. So we're happy about that,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah. I'm going to ignore, yeah, you know, like, freaking, you know, Godfather Mario with all his coins and stuff. And, you know, you can get Paper Mario, but I'll get the rest of the games.
I'm going to get the rest of them and Paper Mario and Kingdom
Hearts. But not Godfather Mario.
So. No. I have concerns about that, but we'll talk about that on another show.
We already did, so I know what it is.
Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, what else is
we
in
have
news?
Two other news articles. I'll blow through this one. Take-Two Interactive hits a 52-week low. This is worrying, too. This is an excerpt from Daily Finance. Let's face it, this hasn't been a great year for game makers and publishers. Few have remained in the black for the past 52 weeks, with the exception of Activision Blizzard, and that company had to post record-breaking sales with both its juggernaut Call of Duty franchise and the years-in-the-making RPG hackfest Diablo 3. Fellow publisher Electronic Arts has been plumbing similar depths, and as has casual gaming juggernaut Zynga, after its hotly anticipated IPO fell flat. Take-Two's felt the pain of delays for top-tier franchises Grand Theft Auto and BioShock. It probably hasn't helped with that the company's latest Max Payne release had a head-to-head launch day battle with Diablo 3 either. Over the past year, revenue, net income, and free cash flow had all taken a dive, and the company's outlook remains muted. The industry has seen its share of ups and downs, with companies swinging wildly between profit and loss. EA, for example, only recently returned to positive earnings territory after years of losses, thanks in part to the blockbuster performance of its Star Wars MMO. Take-Two sits in the red today after posting one of the worst quarterly losses in years. Where does Take-Two go from here? That will depend on how quickly they can put out blockbuster releases. And also on whether or not the public is as excited about those releases as they have been in the years past. There's also another possibility, which is pretty remote, a big buyout.
Okay, so Take-Two, they
are
they,
in the red.
Trying to think. Okay. No, I'm just trying to think, because I Take-Two kind of confuses me a little bit about who they publish and what they don't publish. So they published
Borderlands.
They published do they publish the Bethesda games?
Not Bethesda. No.
Okay. I'm trying to clear that up. Okay. So the only two games that I think that they have that are big that I can think of off the top of my head is Borderlands 2, and they are publishing BioShock Infinite, yes, right? Okay, so it's those are the only two games that I'm thinking.
Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, Grand Theft Auto 5.
Yeah, but that we probably won't see that till after BioShock.
Most likely May next year.
Yeah. So, Grand Theft Auto 5 is probably their best bet.
Yeah, but the thing is, they're hinging all their success this year on. Well, I guess they have their sports titles, the 2K, 2K sports stuff. But I guess it's not as popular.
Well, the thing is there's a couple things you got to consider. They don't have the NFL license.
That's true. But they have the best, they have the best NBA game, out there.
But they don't. But NBA games don't sell as well as Madden.
That's true.
Football is a far more popular sport than NBA. NFL is far more. NFL is basically America's pastime now,
yeah,
to be honest. So if you don't have the NFL license, sure, you can sell maybe more hockey games, more NBA games, more whatever, than EA, but they're still not going to cut into them because they have that hefty NFL
license.
That's
true.
I don't even know what's going. Do you know what's going on with that NFL license? I'm just curious.
I have no freaking clue.
I don't play those games, but I'm just curious. And
yeah, I don't know, to be honest.
But from what I understand, 2K games make better sports games than EA Sports does, though.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But again, is that enough?
Yeah. I'm looking at their homepage right now, and I am not seeing any sort of games other than Borderlands 2 being released this year by 2K.
Borderlands was a surprise success for him. I remember that. I remember when that hit. We had our old podcast where we talked about that a lot. Can Borderlands 2 emulate that? Yeah, but is... But again, I don't think Borderlands sells in the numbers of, you know, like a Call of Duty or something.
And it sucks that, you know, what do you call this? Max Payne 3 didn't sell too much.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a Rockstar game. And Rockstar games, I mean, you know, Red Dead Redemption surprised a lot of people. Even L.A. Noire sold pretty decently, right? You know, and GTA 4, we all know how well that sold. So, I don't know. I think, here's my thing. GTA 5 is their best bet. Maybe Bioshock Infinite, I think, is their other next bet. I think more GTA 5, but is that quick enough for them?
I would think that by the time Bioshock Infinite comes out, they would have they're gonna be back in black, back in, you know. And I think that that's really what it is. I think if anything, we should admire that the fact that Take Two is taking a lot of risks with their library, you know, and you know, like they basically released Duke Nukem Forever. They released, you know, Max Payne 3. It's easy to forget that they also released Darkness 2 this year. They actually had a lot of releases during the first quarter. It's just that the fall only has Borderlands 2, which is what worries a lot of investors, I think.
Okay. And like I said, the sports games, you know, if they had an NFL license, that might help them.
It would.
You know, it's kind of funny because I know people who still play NFL 2K5 over any Madden.
Yeah, I have friends like that too.
So that's odd because I don't play football games, but I guess, you know, if it's a better game than any Madden now, why not stop playing it? So I don't know. I hope Borderlands will help a little bit.
There is a following for Borderlands too. I know at least two people that they're going to buy it. So I'm hopeful.
And the first game did pretty well, huh?
Yeah, it did.
It did better than what people thought it was going to
be. It satisfies, you know, people who like shooters but have loot lust. And I think from what they've told me and stuff, Borderlands 2 addresses a lot of the problems of the first game, which is, you know, some of the guns look the same and feel the same and stuff. So it's a lot more variety in that respect. So
I also liked it because it had it was dungeon crawlery. Uh-huh. Too, and I like dungeon crawlers, and I remember it was a great game. I played it with our friend Justin a lot back in the day. I remember when I got it, he got sick and I was home a lot at that time, and he and I just we played it for hours and hours and hours, and we had a blast. We had a fucking blast, and it had some good things going for it. It didn't have much of a story, but it had, like, you know, each class was good, balanced, and it each had a role to play. So am I gonna get Borderlands 2 though? Probably not, but we'll see.
Yeah, we will.
I hope it does good for 2K.
Yes, absolutely.
So,
last article. Tokyo Jungle arriving in the United States. Have you heard of this game?
I have somewhat. I don't know. I'm not too sure what it is exactly.
This is proof in the pudding that Sony is pretty fucking ballsy. So, going back to Gravity Rush, I don't know if you noticed, but the guys who made Siren made Gravity Rush.
I have Siren.
Yeah, they made that game.
I never played it, though. Isn't it a survival horror?
It's pretty Asian-y survival horror. So, yeah.
Okay.
Going back to this, this is also made, you know, this is made by Sony CAMP. I don't know what that means. Let me read you the synopsis of this. In the future, man leaves the Earth, forcing animals to survive this new environment. Tokyo, now abandoned, is now home to various wildlife, all fighting for survival. In the game story mode, you play through missions based around various animals. The mode will reveal the mystery behind the human's disappearance. A Pomeranian dog and thoroughbred horse are key characters in the story.
What the fuck?
I read that right. I am not mistaken. The heroes.
I think I said what the fuck several times while you're saying that. Because I'm like, so, oh God. Okay. This game sounds bizarre.
Uh-huh.
But I can't say nothing because I'm playing a game, a very bizarre game with a teenage girl killing zombies or in doing other weird stuff. So I guess. And then Sony made a game about a dog falling in love with a flower called Parappa the Rapper.
So are you implying this is a sequel to Parappa the Rapper?
I'm implying that this is pretty normal for Sony.
Yeah. Shit.
What do you think of it?
I am curious about this game. I have friends in Japan that are playing this right now.
In fact, it's out now in Japan?
I know that there are some game designers. I think I want to say it was Kojima that actually played this game. Like, you know, like they had like a video series in like PlayStation Japan where they invited some well-known game designers to check out the game. I don't remember exactly who though, but it was really funny. I think if you Google it, you'll find it. Oh man. I can't believe Sony is releasing this here in the US.
Oh man, that's mass market appeal. All those
I know, right?
So all those bro gamers will be out in line for this shit.
I know, because how many of those bro gamers want to play as a Pomeranian dog?
Oh fuck.
Oh man.
But again, you know what though? I'm going to say this real quick. I'm not, we've debated enough tonight, but I will say this though. I still think, and I still say there is a lot of creative games coming out of Japan.
Yeah.
And there has been. It's just the problem that we're seeing is, like you said, outdated developmental practices. The creativity is still there. There's still a lot of creative games. We're just not seeing as many.
I also don't think that we should count first parties, because first parties have Western developers that they can share tools with. They have more of a freedom to be able to adopt certain technologies. And even I will even lump Square into that, because they have Western developers that are very aware of how online spaces should be.
What about Capcom and Konami? Because they do have Western developers as well, too.
Not so much Konami. Capcom, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but the other third parties, like the smaller devs, like Atlus and stuff like that, it'll be interesting once we see, like games that they develop themselves for online. I don't count Persona 4 Arena, because that's Arc System Works, they're very knowledgeable when it comes to that field.
Right.
Can't count the Soul series either, because that's From Software. So, and that's not really like online, like multiplayer, like all at the same time. That's asynchronous mostly. So,
just announce my Persona 5 and we'll be happy.
Yeah. Well, SMT4 for 3DS.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. And we'll get it here, I guarantee you that.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
SMT has a good following.
Absolutely.
In the United States. So.
But are you ready for party chat, sir?
Yes, let's see what emails we got.
We actually got a lot of emails this week.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so the first email is by Derek. Dear Alex and Anthony, thanks for answering my last question and for taking the time to answer this one. Hope you both are doing well. Much better than last week, I'll tell you that, Derek. I wanted to get your thoughts on Sony's announcement that PS1 Classics will finally be available for purchase on the Vita. Finally? That's like my that's my reaction. Yeah. I myself am very much excited about this. I did not buy a Vita at launch, and I still haven't bought one because there just aren't many Vita games that interest me at the moment. With this announcement, however, I feel a definite incentive to purchase a Vita sometime in the near future. It's kind of difficult to explain, but I can relate to it when I bought the 3DS. Part of that decision was based on the Virtual Console feature. I just like the option to buy and play games for older systems for not too expensive price anyway. There are some PS1 classics that I missed the first time around, such as Xenogears, and I would very much like to play them. I think the Vita would be a great way to do so, especially since I could take it on the go. Sincerely, Derek. I agree with this, because the PSP was a great system to play your PS1 games, but it lacked a second analog stick, which sucked.
Yeah.
I think the Vita is a great system to be able to play all these games again, and, it is not a replacement for upcoming Vita games.
No.
This is a $300 platform, Derek. So you have to understand, it's kind of like buying the PlayStation 1 at its original launch price. So, I mean, yes, it's an additional, it is an incentive, but it shouldn't be the main reason why you would buy the platform.
I agree. And here's the thing, you could already do that with the PS3. Sure, it's not on the road.
And the PSP.
Yeah, the PSP as well.
Which I mean, cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I bought the Vita not because of that either. I bought the Vita because it's a new piece of hardware. And its launch was actually pretty good. Uh-huh. The problem isn't launch, though. It's post-launch.
Yeah.
If the Vita was getting more games in, like, every month as in, you know, like Gravity Rush,
yeah.
I would be more happy. And I'm not saying exactly like that game. I'm saying of that quality and of that production value.
Or even something like from Uncharted or even like Mortal Kombat, you know, like, but as it stands right now, we're getting maybe like more independent stuff, which is fine. They're all good too, but we need like full price titles, a lot more of it on the Vita, because that was the promise that Sony had.
Yeah, the Vita was supposed to be supported quite a bit.
Yeah.
But, and again, I think the Vita had a very good launch.
Mm-hmm.
It's just post-launch again. I mean, you know, and the game and some of the games that were released post-launch are ports. I mean, I like Mortal Kombat on the Vita. Don't get me wrong, Alex.
Uh-huh.
But it's a port.
Yeah.
Disgaea 3, great game, but it's a port.
Uh-huh.
You know,
Uncharted,
you know,
was an original game, but, you know, it's Uncharted.
Well, I count Uncharted on that because it's an original Uncharted game. It's not like it's a port of, you know, Uncharted 3 or something.
Right, right.
You know, either original IPs or, you know, or a God of War game that is not a port, a God of War game designed for Vita,
uh-huh,
or something. That's what I want to see. Yeah. And the PSP did that very well.
Yeah.
I mean, they had Ratchet and Clank games, uh-huh, that, you know, what was it, Super Agent Clank, mm-hmm, or Ratchet, what was it, Daxter, Jack, yep, and Daxter, those, mm, guys. I mean, they had spinoffs of, you know, games on the PS2 on the PSP. Why not do that more on the motherfucking Vita?
I think the difficulty with this idea is that why should you make these games just for the Vita? You, right, know what I'm saying? And I think that in order to do that, you need to kind of take advantage of what the Vita provides you. Like, you know, like Assassin's Creed Liberation, I'll definitely get that game for the Vita, but why is it on the Vita? You know, yeah, like, that could be on a console.
Well, I think in that case, well, they have Assassin's Creed 3, I think, is part of the reason. And I think, handhelds are good for exploring side stories, though.
Yeah, I agree with that. But that's a game that you could easily have made on the PS3, which is the same. That was the kind of idea why people didn't buy the God of War PSP games.
Right.
Is because, well, why would I buy it there? I mean, why shouldn't it just be a PS3 game? Which they eventually did. They made it into a PS3 compilation. So that's kind of like what I'm saying here, is that you need to offer a unique experience that's just not,
oh,
you know, that's unique to the Vita. And I'm not talking about like a side story. I think side stories are cool, but it's not enough to justify it. So, you know, with that said, I mean, the Vita has some pretty interesting games. I don't know what Black Ops we're getting for the Vita, but I'm hoping it'll tie in with Part 1 and Part 2. Like, maybe it'll bridge the stories of both, which will be really fun. Assassin's Creed Liberation, great game. I tried the demo for Resistance, and wow, what a missed opportunity that game was.
Oh, I think I understand what you mean by unique experiences, right?
Yeah.
I think, let's go to Gravity Rush for a second. If you can utilize that touchscreen too,
uh-huh,
in way, you know, and even Dynasty Warriors, I like that game, and I'm not a big Dynasty Warriors fan. That's no secret in this podcast, but right, I like that one. And why? Because it utilized the touchscreen uniquely, I thought.
Exactly, absolutely.
And the same with Gravity Rush. Like, I was telling, did I tell you on this on the phone, or no, did I tell you this on the podcast?
You told me on the phone.
Okay, the way you do a dodge slide. You usually dodge slides are done, you know, with a button. In this game, you actually have to slide your finger on the touchscreen. And at first, I was like, "What?" But it, uh-huh, works very well. And then it asks you to do a counterattack by pushing the square button.
Uh-huh.
You can do that very easily. And it works. It adds another control scheme that is not available on the console.
And the key here is not that, oh my god, they're adding more controls. It's the fact that they're adding controls and it's intuitive. It's natural.
Yeah, it's not a gimmick. And then, like I told you too on the phone as well, is using when you shift gravities, you know, that part in the demo,
mm-hmm.
and how you have to aim at like certain targets. Mm-hmm. That's easier done with the motion gyro
mm-hmm.
in the handheld as opposed to the thumbstick.
And actually, one of the things that was really unique about Uncharted on the Vita, which I really really liked, is when you do aim, what you can do is you can use the right stick to kind of calibrate your aim. But if you only need to tweak it just a little bit, you can tilt the Vita slightly towards that direction so that it'll you know correct your missed aim and stuff. And I felt that was like a brilliant use of the motion on the Vita. And I'm surprised that they didn't learn from that and actually applied it on, you know, Uncharted on the PS3, because that would be fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe Assassin's Creed will utilize those features.
Well, I'll tell you this. Assassin's Creed Liberation is going to play slightly differently from Assassin's Creed on the consoles, because the character will not automatically jump. There is a jump button for this character.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, so that is actually, it sounds trivial, but it is a huge gameplay change.
No, I agree, because that's not, when you add a button to something that didn't need a button, that is a big change.
Yeah, I mean, so my guess is it will play closer to something like Infamous than Assassin's Creed.
Now, I wonder what they're going to do with Call of Duty, like you said, if they can differentiate that from Black Ops 2 on the consoles.
Yeah. But again, we can't really speculate because we don't know anything about it.
There has been nothing on it, and it's supposed to come out this year?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see about that.
All right. Well, thank you for the email, Derek. That was really awesome of you.
Okay.
So let's move on to Allie. Hey guys, I just want to comment on two games that were mentioned and two games that were not mentioned in episode 20. I played all these games except for the last one. First, the two games that were mentioned, Metal Gear Solid Rising Revengeance. It does play like Bayonetta with the over-the-top fighting mechanics, but Raiden does have better heals.
Okay.
Nice. There are two attack buttons, one for light and one for heavy attacks. There's also a new mechanic, blade mode, which is more like bullet time because everything slows down. Here you can use your blade and literally cut through enemies into tiny pieces if you are skilled enough. The best part is that you can do this mid-combo. I think you activate it by clicking on the right stick and it goes to over-the-shoulder mode. And then you basically like use the right stick to use the sword, I think. I think if I remember correctly. It becomes kind of like a third-person sword slashing game. The surprising thing I found is that you can play this like a Metal Gear game and sneak around. Whether you sneak to avoid guards or silently kill them with blade mode is up to you, but the game does encourage you to kill everything on screen. Well, yeah, of course, it's a freaking action game.
That's awesome.
Number two, Hitman Absolution. As much as I like the Assassin's Creed franchise, to me, Hitman is the better assassination game. Just like the punchline that was in the trailer for the game, Agent 47 is the original assassin. I really like the options the game gives you on how to assassinate your target. Also, it is pretty hard to take down your target quietly because you have to plan it all out and make sure you don't get caught. This makes it more rewarding when you do pull off the job and allows you to replay the mission using different approaches. Now, I agree with him. Hitman was a series that evades me because the amount of experimentation and trial and error in Hitman games is freaking insane.
Yeah, I like Hitman Blood Money.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good game. That was the last one that came out, huh?
That was like 5-6 years ago.
2006, it was actually one of the early games on Xbox 360.
Yeah.
I got a copy of it and I played it and it still holds up real well.
It does, yeah.
Well, that's the difference, because Hitman focus. See, the difference between that and Assassin's Creed is Assassin's Creed's open world.
Yeah,
which works for that game.
Yeah,
but Hitman is different because it's not open world; it's more condensed.
And it's the it's concentrated on the getting in and getting out, you know, doing your mission, kind of gameplay, as opposed to how to approach it, you know, from a more macro point of view. This is more micro, I would say.
Yeah, it's all like Assassin's Creed is about the big details.
Uh-huh.
And Hitman is about the minor details.
Right, right. That's what I meant.
Yeah. So I agree. I like Hitman.
Yeah, I pre-ordered Hitman Absolution, by the way.
When does that come out? I'm thinking of
pre-ordering. October.
October.
Yeah, I could probably get that game. Wait a second. Let me check. And mind you, this is actually my first Hitman game.
Oh.
Absolution.
You've never played Blood Money?
No, I played the demos and stuff, but like, you know, I never really got into it, you know, because it's I don't know, maybe it's just the production values that made me kind of, you know, but I did like the last Hitman game that I played the demo of on the Xbox 360, speaking of which. So that was interesting to me. But Hitman Absolution will be my first. And it's kind of funny because it is being published by Square Enix. And by the way, it's being released November 20th.
It's funny how Tomb Raider and Kanan Lynch and Tomb Raider are now part of the same brand as Final Fantasy. Chrono and shit. Yeah,
so Dragon weird.
Quest. It is weird. We're all part of the same brand.
Yeah, but it's good. It's good. Okay, now the two games that wasn't mentioned. Project P100. I don't know why this game wasn't showcased at the press conference, because it's a really fun game. Well, you know what, Ali? We were thinking the exact same thing, especially with all the other games we wanted to talk about. The mechanics of gathering people are like Pikmin. The battle mechanics is where this game shines, because it is comical. The citizens that you rescue join your team and will transform into weapons for you to use against giant robots. For instance, you can turn your citizens into a giant gun and blast away at a robot. The comedic action of this game reminds me of Beautiful Joe. And mind you, this is developed by Platinum Games, by Hideki Kamiya.
Huh.
Uh-huh. Where was this at the Wii U press conference?
Again, Nintendo facepalm.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah. Next one, Splinter Cell Blacklist. I watched the live demo at the Ubisoft booth and it looked amazing. The game looks like it combined game mechanics from other games, because you climbed like how you do in Assassin's Creed and shoot like how you would in Ghost Recon. To me, this might replace Metal Gear, like how Forza Motorsport did with Gran Turismo. Thanks for taking my comment. Thank you, Ali. That was a really cool email. I don't think that Splinter Cell Blacklist will replace Metal Gear, because Splinter Cell Blacklist doesn't seem like a stealth game.
Well, here's the thing. Metal Gear, and I know they get a lot of comparisons.
Uh-huh.
But there's a big difference. The big difference between Metal Gear is it could get very, very, I guess, anime-ish at times.
Yeah.
A little bit. And that's part of the charm of Metal Gear. But part of the charm of Splinter Cell is the grounded realism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I don't think that's really a thing of replacing. I think it's just two different ways of doing stealth.
Right.
And that's okay. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I like stealth games, and I like both kinds, and I'm happy with that. That's just mm-hmm. my thought.
Yeah. By the way, I'm reading this on our on Gamer Horizon email address, and the advertising on the side is advertising Dishonored.
Oh, we forgot about that. That's
very telling. That is also an assassin game that's worth actually noting.
There's a lot of, you know what's funny? There's a lot of assassins games.
I noticed that. I noticed that.
But they're not clones of each other.
No, they're completely different.
Which is funny.
Like, this is like the year of the bow and arrow, as it is the year of stealth.
Yep.
This is crazy. Where's our Metal Gear?
Yeah. Well, I thought Kojima had a big announcement. I guess it wasn't ready or something.
I know, right?
We do know this. There's some big game in works with Kojima Studios. Yeah. We just don't know what it is.
Yeah.
So
we'll see.
Maybe TGS.
Oh, well, who knows? All right. This next email is by Sky. So, I just wanted to give my response to the E3 podcast while trying to keep this as brief as possible. I don't want to go on forever with this in text form. By the way, as for EA and Ubisoft, I'm not going over those conferences because except for the games. As for the big three, I'll admit, I didn't watch the Sony one. I kind of forgot about it since I was already playing Phantasy Star Online Blue Burst. Great PC port, by the way. Okay. With the exception of the Wonder Book stuff, from what I heard at a Sony press conference, it sounded pretty good. PlayStation All-Stars, Battle Royale, Last of Us, and the like, I'm pretty excited for, despite the obvious lack of Vita presence. Microsoft, but I'm sorry, I can't rank that above Nintendo. The half-hour non-gaming crap aside, I wasn't as excited despite seeing games I knew were coming from both of them. Sure, there's Halo, there's Gears, and the like did look pretty good, but I just didn't care as much despite still wanting an Xbox 360. Now, I was more excited for some of the existing Nintendo games, but I will agree that the Wii U's true first impression was underwhelming compared to last year, especially the third party. Even with Mass Effect 3 and Batman, I was like, whoa, well, that's interesting, but they must know it's a little too late for some of these. Pikmin 3, Zombie U, and Nintendo Land were interesting enough for me, however. I thought that the 3DS conference was better, though, since we're still on Nintendo here. I'm pumped for Paper Mario, Castlevania Lords of Shadow, Mirror of Fate, by the way, longest title ever, and Kingdom Hearts. Dream Drop Distance. I was also willing to forgive the slip-up with Fire Emblem Awakening, since it was practically all over the net not too long after the conference ended. Mind you, it was all over the internet because they weren't sure, but it was the following day that Nintendo Twitter account that confirmed it. It was actually coming out.
That's kind of an insult, isn't it, to Fire Emblem?
Yeah, it's a little bit.
Yeah.
But anyways, the reason why we were focused on the conference, again, just to reiterate, was because a lot more people were watching the press conferences than actually following games on Twitter and stuff. We're basically kind of trying to see it in the eyes of a mainstream gamer or casual gamer. Not casual as in Peggle gamer, talking about people who play Call of Duty and stuff mostly, or play RPGs mostly, but don't really deal with other genres. I think that's fair. Definition. As for several games that were there, I've been excited for. I'll go over them really quick. Assassin's Creed 3, I was really already excited for this new setting and slowly evolving gameplay. Watch Dogs, wow. That trailer, just wow. I already heard about the whole trailer and it still blew me away when it was over. I can't wait to try that. I can't wait to try the iPhone and iPad app either, because I heard that ties into the gameplay also. Splinter Cell, I should have gone over this earlier in the Microsoft part. I'm honestly excited for this since there was some unbelievable shooting and stealth combos for that trailer. It really looks like they've improved the formula from Conviction. Yeah, I'm still iffy on it, though. It's really difficult to be excited about Splinter Cell.
No, Michael Ironside.
Well, that wasn't my problem. The problem was that it's just there's a lot of inconsistency between Conviction, which is a pretty good Splinter Cell game, and then this, you know, so... That 3DS Epic Mickey game, now that's an Epic Mickey I want to play. Castle of Illusion 2 with old school Disney video games? Hell yeah. Though I want to ask something. Why did the original in this call the villain miserable or something when she's clearly Maleficent? That was a flub on the 3DS press conference. I actually noticed that too. But if you actually Google Miserabelle and Castle of Illusion, you'll see what Miserabelle actually looks like, which she doesn't look anything like Maleficent at all. So I don't know. Yeah, Miserabelle. Yeah. That's why I was like, why is Maleficent on the 3DS screen? That's not Miserabelle.
Whatever. She was kind of an evil sorcerer too, huh?
She is, but she looked different from, you know, Maleficent.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
continuing this, Final Fantasy Theorhythm, they put Elite Beat Agents in Final Fantasy. By the way, I loved Elite Beat Agents. And it is glorious. Or as Shao Kahn would say from Mortal Kombat Annihilation, it is glorious! You watch
Never
that movie?
Never mention that movie again.
Yes. But I forgot who the guy plays as Shao Kahn. Like, I've seen him on several movies, but every time I see him in that movie, I just laugh.
You know Harry Morgan from, you know, Dexter's dad is Raiden?
I know he's Raiden in that one. That trips me out.
Okay.
It's ridiculous. Oh, shit. My God. Okay. Rayman Legends, well, I'm loving Origins, so I wouldn't be surprised if this was just as awesome. But here's the thing. They didn't say that Legends is exclusive to the Wii U.
That is true.
They never said anything about that. So we'll see.
It could even use smart glass. I'm just saying, Alex.
You know what platform this would be perfect for? The Vita.
It would.
Because you already have the touchscreen there.
Yep.
You know? See, food for thought, huh?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I'd go on, but this might take too long, so just a few more games I can't wait for. Besides, I still need to get Super Mario 3D Land and Kid Icarus Uprising in the meantime. Anyways, I'll stop for now. I'm probably forgetting some games that I should have said, but like I said before, I don't want this to take forever to type or read. So see you guys later. An awesome podcast, both of you. Well, thank you, Sky. This was really awesome and stuff. And yeah, it's cool games.
Cool email. Can I say one thing, though?
Yeah.
The reason I ranked Nintendo lower than Microsoft was because Microsoft may have flubbed a bit in their podcast.
You mean, and yes, at conference?
Conference. Podcast. Well, we just heard the word podcast. Fuck that. Okay, press conferences. I don't play my Xbox 360 as much as I used to. But by no means am I discouraged by it.
Yeah.
Okay, and here's my argument towards that. I'm discouraged by the Wii U. So yeah. When a press conference discourages me from a new console, that's worse than Nike the game.
Yeah. When when there's like a abrupt change in opinion because of what was shown or the lack thereof, then yeah, it's time to question whether or not a $300 investment is worth it.
And like we said, my reaction towards my change of heart towards the Wii U has Alex very concerned
and very confused a lot, you know, because I'm more critical of Nintendo, but holy crap. I've seen people who are Nintendo fans basically saying they're not picking it up on day one. That is freaking scary.
Yeah, unless they do something, some magical press conference
you know
or something.
You know what they're going to do is they're going to do a Nintendo Direct. They're going to do those because they're trying to copy Apple so much. And I don't think that it's going to work because the people that they're trying to reach out already watched the G4 conference. And you know what's funny, too, is that the Washington Post, I know that's not a video game, you know, like newspaper and stuff. But if this is an indication of how poor the messaging is on the Wii U, then Nintendo better freaking roll up their sleeves. Washington Post basically posted that the Nintendo Wii U is an add-on to the existing Wii. And I told you months ago that the messaging of the Wii U needs to be clear that it is a brand new platform, not an accessory. But now this is proof in the pudding. This is the proof that I told you this was going to happen. Somebody is going to say the Wii U is an accessory.
Oh, so it's the Sega CD of the Wii.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to get in an argument with you, but what I'm saying is it's the Sega CD of the Wii.
Yeah, it's an add-on for the Wii, and that's bad. That's bad if mainstream people are getting that wrong.
Can I say something about the Wii, though?
Sure.
I know a lot of people hate the Wii. I don't.
It was a pretty decent console, which had a really good run of unique games on it.
It's not Nintendo's weakest console. I will always contend that the N64 was. I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for that, but I'm not going to explain why. There's plenty of reasons as to why that console's their worst one, in my opinion. Because you have one amazing game doesn't make it the greatest system of all time, in my opinion.
Well, keep moving. Let's not get into that right now.
Well, right. But what I'm saying is the Wii was a great console, to a degree. Not as good as 360, not as good as PS3.
Okay.
But it had, you know, Skyward Sword, it had Xenoblade, it had, what was that one game? Mad World. You know, it has the No More Heroes 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
It has the virtual console, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good console. It's not the best one, but it's not, you know, it's not as good as GameCube.
Yeah, absolutely.
GameCube was better.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's move on. This is by Oscar. Hey guys, great episode. I have to say that I mostly agreed with both of your thoughts on E3 this year. However, there was one comment made by Anthony that I took some issue with. He said something along the lines of porting Mass Effect on the PS3 was pointless, or at the very least, that the Wii U version of Mass Effect 3 was more pointless than the PS3 version. Well, I disagree. Being someone who until very recently who did not own an Xbox 360 or a powerful PC, you know, or PC powerful enough to play the games I couldn't enjoy, like Mass Effect, until it was ported to PS3, I played the series starting with the second game, and while yes, I did feel left out when the characters referenced the events of the original game, the game was good enough to where it can stand on its own despite being a sequel. Hell, even though I have a 360 now, and I'm finally able to play the first game, I'm not getting the 360 version of 3, but rather the PS3 version, because I already have a connection with that version of the game, and I don't think I'm the only one. I fail to see how it is pointless at all, especially since I like the game enough to finish it 3 times, my last playthrough being on the hardest setting. Regardless, this was a good episode, guys, and I'm looking forward to the next one. I am open to 360 suggestions if you have any. Sincerely, Oscar.
Oh, damn.
Okay. I am going to sit back and listen to you talk about this.
You know, Mass Effect was conceived as, and I'm not playing fanboy because I do prefer my PS3 these days, right?
Yeah.
But as far as Mass Effect concerned, it was made as a trilogy for PC and 360 initially. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is it good that you guys got Mass Effect 2? Sure, why not, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I said it was pointless was it just... I think you really have to play the first game to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
To understand, you know, how fulfilling that experience is playing all 3 games. I mean, it's great that you guys have the options to play 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
But I still... What I meant by pointless is it just... It's kind of like watching the Star Wars trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
But only watching Empire and Return of the Jedi, not being allowed for whatever reasons to watch A New Hope.
Right.
And these are non-special edition versions, just okay. To clarify that. It's kind of that same thing to me. It's kind of like, again, reading Lord of the Rings starting with the Two Towers and Return of the King, but not reading Fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and that comic, I've seen it, that doesn't cut it. I mean, that game as an experience, I mean... You know, it's very different when you have to choose between Kaiden and Elenco actually playing the game as opposed to choosing it through a digital choose your own adventure.
Yeah, I think I kind of see where Oscar is coming from with this, because the way that they built Mass Effect 2 was really interesting, because it almost is as if they rebooted the whole series. Because right. You know how that starts, you know, like you're basically... I don't fucking talk about it right now because it's too soon. But you know how it started. It's kind of like it's almost a redo. Even though, regardless of the events that happened in the first game, it's almost as if like it's completely different from the first game in a way.
Right, I understand. I can see that.
Yeah. And I think what you're really trying to say is that to you value the complete experience more so than just having part of it. And if it is available to you, then why not do that?
Right, I can see that. Well, that goes for everything. I like... Some people tell me, you know, you could watch this TV series starting at season 3.
Mm-hmm.
Even though seasons 1 and 2 suck. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, if seasons 1 and 2 suck, oh well, I'll watch them. Mm-hmm. I have to... I'm the type of person that has to have that complete experience.
Well, it gives context. It gives more context to what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm that type of person that, you know, like when I watch a TV series, I have to watch the webisodes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just watched Battlestar Galactica, right?
Mm-hmm.
I watched all the webisodes,
right.
Which you don't have to watch, but I watched all the webisodes.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the two side movies they made, mm-hmm. Razor and The Plan, which you don't have to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But I watched them anyway, and the entire series.
Mm-hmm.
And for something like that, I feel you have to experience it. And I'm still standing... Maybe I should not have said pointless on PS3.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's good that, you know, I see your points. I'll take back the pointless comment. It's just that I just don't see me experiencing it because I've experienced the full experience.
Right, right, right.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Now, I will say, though, that the Wii version is of Mass Effect 3, though, is pointless.
Yeah, I was just thinking that because it's like, okay, it's the last game of the trilogy. And the thing is, you can't just play 3 without playing 2, because there's so much interlocking, you know, kind of storylines between 2 and 3, and even 1 and 3, that you can't just fucking jump into the last game and expect to understand everything.
Oh, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to correct saying pointless. I'm going to say Mass Effect 2 and 3 is good on the PS3, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just not complete, but it's pointful. It still has a point. And your points of, like, you know, the restarting with the way Mass Effect 2 begins?
Yeah.
That validates that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I will, for once, Alex, I'm conceding. This is a point, okay? It's conceding. Okay. I think I got caught up in the moment because I was very pissed off at Nintendo last week. I think that's what happened.
But despite that, though, I think that your views on the Wii U version of Mass Effect 3 is valid. That is absolutely valid.
It's pointless!
Yeah.
and you know what would be hilarious? Oh, we're going to release Mass Effect 3. Oh, okay. A few months later, Wii U gets Mass Effect 2, like a 3-year-old game.
No, they're not going to do that. They're going to just do comics. Funny, they're just going to do comics for the first and second game.
Oh, that would be stupid.
Ugh.
And just, like I said, if you have a choice, personally, I would go with the 360 or PC. Mm-hmm. But if, you know, like in Oscar's case, at least go with the PS2. Do not go with the Wii U. Let's avoid that altogether.
Yeah, I don't see why the Wii U is even an option, sadly.
Okay. Well, anyway, let's do one more thing for Oscar's email.
Okay.
Xbox 360 recommendations real quick. I don't mind doing that to the audience. I'll give out three titles, and why don't you give out three titles?
Oh, geez. I don't know. Okay, I'll try. But why don't you start first?
Okay. Well, I know Oscar personally very well, so I know his taste, so I'm going to recommend, you'll predict these, Tales of Vesperia.
okay, yeah.
I have to recommend that game. Tales of Vesperia, Lost Odyssey.
Okay.
And for arcade games, Bastion.
Okay.
Okay, so what about you?
Oh, geez. I was going to recommend Lost Odyssey, to be honest, and Tales of Vesperia. I think those two are really good RPGs. Let's see. I'll have to get back to you on that as far as like Xbox 360 games.
What about some live arcade? Because he does like indie games.
You know, if you like... Not a lot of people liked it, but I've heard some people liked it, is Blue Dragon.
I like Blue Dragon. It's not a mind-blowing JRPG.
Mm-hmm.
But it is what it is. It's just a very classic traditional style JRPG. It's kind of in between, but it's good.
Yeah. Okay.
So I would go with Blue Dragon. It's not as bad as people make it out to be, but it's not anything overly spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
yeah, it's difficult to recommend like 360 games because there's only a few that I can recommend. Actually, you know what? Fable 2 I'd recommend. Not 3, not 1, but 2 I would recommend. I think 2 was the stronger of all three of them. Don't get the Kinect, please. I'm still trying to figure out what other games are good on the Kinect, and
what
I can't
arcade?
Really.
Arcade games. You really like the arcade games. You got to recommend at least something. And he does like some of the indie games that you do like. He does cater to that taste. So
Fez is fantastic. $10, can't go wrong. There's so much magic in that thing that, you know, you need to play it. Like, even you need to play it, Anthony.
I will eventually.
Yeah. It's a game that you don't sit down and play for hours. It is a game that you pop in, play, and then you get out.
That's what I've heard. I heard it's unique. I'm not, you know, my only fear is I'm worried that it's going to be as pretentious as Braid, but I heard it doesn't really have as much narrative as Braid does.
Oh, no.
So...
And again, watch Indie Game the Movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I will watch Indie Game the Movie by this week. I promise you.
Okay.
For next week, we'll talk about Indie Game the fucking movie next
okay.
week.
All right. As long as...
And have you... You know what? You got to watch Mega 64's trailer for it.
They have a trailer for it?
Mega 64 made their own mock trailer of it.
Oh, jeez.
They're like, the movie looks really boring, so we made it more exciting.
Oh, jeez.
And it's all about a conspiracy about them stealing code and shit.
Oh, jeez.
And you have guys like helicopters and explosions and...
Mm. Yeah, the collector's edition for Indie Game the Movie is actually going to be $70, and it has 300 hours of content. With interviews from people that they didn't put in there in the movie, like with Genova Chen and several other people. And they're actually creating content right now just for the collector's edition.
I like Genova Chen.
Yeah.
I think that game company is amazing.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. So that about does it for all the emails that we received this week. Thank you very much, guys, for all the emails again, by the way. Do you want to like add anything to that, Anthony?
I like all the emails. I'm glad I got one email that I got to debate with for once, though, which is nice. I like to argue, so yay!
Yay! And actually, like, you know, if you guys have any questions, comments, disagreements, whatever you guys want to bring up, video game related or whatnot, about Disneyland, about Indie Game the Movie, whatever. Or like about Godfather Mario or anything like that being a score attack. You can always email us at partychat@gamerhorizon.com. And once again, that is partychat@gamerhorizon.com. We love getting emails, and this week's emails are no exception. Thank you guys for all your emails. That is what powers us. That is what we love to do.
We got new listeners emails that we haven't gotten from people before, so we want to hear from the silent majority.
Yes, silent majority. You know, like, we will, you know, your questions are as valid as everybody else's. So
if you agree with Alex or something, or I happen to piss somebody off, let us know.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, interesting talking points is always, you know, it's always something to talk about. So in any case, that about does it for this episode of the Game Horizon podcast. I think we already gave you guys a clue as to what we're going to talk about next week, which is Indie Game the Movie, once Anthony finally gets his butt off and actually watches the damn movie.
And I'll have Lollipop Chainsaw Review.
Yes, there's that too. And
you know, might too. Game's not long.
Yeah, we'll see. And, you know, of course, there's Gravity Rush. It's coming and stuff. And just all that stuff coming in the next week's episode of the Game Horizon podcast. But again, thank you very much. Email us at partychat@gamehorizon.com. Please, 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 please do the survey that we have on the website, which is gamehorizon.com. We love getting surveys and stuff because we want to figure out how we're going to design a new website, which sadly did not launch at E3, but it's almost there.
And I have a couple things to say.
Okay.
My YouTube channel.
All right.
YouTube.com/MagusX1. I talk about non-gaming stuff now. I also made a change to my channel that I announced in my last video, which I launched last night.
Okay.
I used to do game reviews. They're not going to be done on my channel anymore.
Oh, okay.
That's because they're going to be done on here or on the website. They'll be on Gamer Horizon.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
There's really no point in doing them on my channel, I feel.
It's kind of redundant.
Yeah.
Redundancy is redundant.
Yeah, so there's really no point in doing them.
Yeah.
I will still talk about gaming stuff, and Alex might pop up in some of my videos.
Sure.
But, you know.
We will see.
We'll talk about... I think I'm going to be more anime-centric.
Okay.
Sounds good. And TV-centric, so...
Great. There you go. And of course, you'll find both our Twitter accounts on GameHorizon.com. You can also listen to our podcast and actually subscribe to our podcast on GameHorizon.com. But in case you don't want to click that link, my Twitter account is twitter.com/EternityInBlack. Anthony's Twitter account, Anthony's Eternity in Black. Jeez, I'm just totally flubbing tonight.
I'll do it.
Okay.
Alex is Eternity in Black, twitter.com/EternityInBlack. Mine is twitter.com/Mega61. So there you go.
Awesome. So, yeah, I had a lot of fun this week, and I think, like, next week it's going to be a lot more fun, don't you think?
Yeah. I think I got you a little heated up in our Sega CD argument.
Oh, stop it. You did not. So
it was fun.
All right.
I will say, follow our Twitters, because me and Alex were talking about doing our eyebrows this morning.
and they can get our nails painted.
I don't even know what the hell that conversation started about.
But you know what? I have no idea what it is, so I'm not even going to get into that.
I don't know. It was about toenails.
Toenails and stuff. But anyways, until next week, guys. We'll talk to you guys later.